Matt, Debbie is Keisha May. Debbie is a definite Keisha May.
Debbie is a definite?
Yeah.
One of them just called in for the 15-month I swear it was Debbie.
Yeah.
I think Debbie's calling in. I'm sorry to call you. I'm sorry.
Tip over.
I just keep making this one's running. This is running. We're good.
Cool.
Okay.
Transit system in the Highlands that very good to use transit.
Janice, you on the line? Janice, you there?
I'm going to go to the next one. Jack Shire of Morris County Freeholder.
Elizabeth Calabrese, Bergen County Freeholder.
Tim Billingham, I'm a public member.
Keisha Way, Passaic County Freeholder.
Scott Wignack, public member for Morristown.
Bill Cocker, Mayor of Chester County.
Tracy Carluccio, public representative, Hunterdon County.
Eric Peterson, Hunterdon County Freeholder.
Mimi Lester, Sippany in Morris County.
Kurt Olstead, Chester Township, public member.
Janice Kovach, Town of Clinton, County.
This meeting was advertised in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act, and we do have a quorum present. All who wish, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Welcome all to our first meeting of the new year. We're starting a little bit late because the Natural Resources Committee, which has been meeting since the crack of dawn, was too interesting to stop. We have minutes from our last meeting of December 13th. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Any comments or corrections?
Mr. Chair, I was asked to add to the, just to put in the people that were absent, they would be Tahisha, Debbie, and Liz, to add that, and so we'll do that out to the official record.
Okay. It was a sparsely attended meeting, as you recall.
Right.
The snow was coming down, and only a few hardy souls managed to make
some of us. Right. Okay, all those in favor of the minutes? Approving the minutes?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Abstain.
Two abstentions? Okay. I think all members and the public now should have received notice of the three public hearings that have been scheduled on the draft regional master plan. They will be. They all start at slightly different times just because of the needs of the buildings that we're using for the hearings. The first is February 6th at 4 p.m. in Morristown. The second is February 11th at 6 in Patterson. And the third is February 13th at 6:30 in Glen Gardner. And at all the hearings, all council members are welcome, but in any case, we will take a record of what is said there, and all council members will be made aware of that. And at all the hearings, regardless of their start time, we will continue until everybody present has had a chance to speak. And for the public, we will, again, as in the past, encourage members of the public to submit detailed comments in writing and provide summary comments orally, but we will accept all comments as they are given. We've been invited, council was invited to attend the opening of the Mount Arlington train station this Sunday, and Kurt Allstadt has agreed to represent the council at this event, which is, I think, at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. It's a nice thing.
I understand the Governor Corbyn and planning to be there as well.
Once Governor Corbyn heard that Kurt would be there, he changed his plans.
Kurt is monetized.
To the members of the council, Eileen and I have been talking, and Tom too, and it seems like it probably makes sense to at least revisit our committee structure and probably make some changes in that for the next year. So we're going to be working on that over the next month, and I will send out some ideas to council members by email of proposed changes. And we have at the moment 11 committees on paper, although not all of them meet. And our needs as we move to the phase of adopting a regional master plan are going to change. The kind of issues, or at least the format of the issues we consider, is going to change. And in order to best address those issues and make the best use of our time as members, I think we want to look at those committees. So I will be circulating some ideas about that, but in the meantime, all of you, please don't hesitate to send me any ideas or talk to me about ideas you have. Of ways to make that structure work as well as possible. Subcommittees, I guess, is the right word. The only committee, the personnel committee, will meet for a short time at the conclusion of the council meeting today to discuss several issues. That personnel committee always meets in executive session. The council as a whole will have an executive session at the end of our discussions today to discuss one matter of litigation. And the next meeting of the council, the schedule, the council schedule of meetings for the new year is in our packets, but the next scheduled meeting of the council will be February 28th at 10, which will be after the all three public hearings have been held. That concludes my report. Now, members of the council have items to report.
Well, Mr. Chairman, could you explain why we have a transcriptionist here?
Yes, I should explain why we have a transcriptionist here. The transcriptionist, who is Walter Pirelli, is here on behalf of a developer who has a project that will be heard before us on the agenda, number 10 on the agenda, and he asked to have a transcriptionist here. Other comments from council? Eileen, Executive Director's report.
Thank you, and good morning, all. I just want to give you an update on what the staff has been doing since we last met. Our last meeting was December 13th. We've been working on many issues related to the final draft plan and working towards consideration of adoption of same. Copies of the draft plan have now been sent to all Highlands municipalities and counties. It was posted on our website and was actually posted before the official date of release. Copies have also been sent to the Governor's Office, all legislators and state agencies. All GIS files for the lands map series for the land use capability are available on the website as well. The property search tool has been updated and continues to be enhanced, but it is available online. I encourage the public to have a look online at that property search tool. It does provide very useful information. There's also an updated atlas which shows block and lot information with RMP overlays, zone overlays. That's also available on the website. Also at the request of one of the council members, we moved that atlas up to the front page so that it was readily accessible. The information to purchase copies of the plan and the atlas are available on the website. We also put information out on the table coming into this room for those that would wish to do so. The CD with the regional master plan, atlas and other information is available from this office for $2 if picked up here, $5 if mailed, but you can put an order in for one of those while you're here. The MOU with OSG and SPC was executed after the vote to approve by both the State Planning Commission and the Highlands Council at their respective meetings in December 2007. We're currently working on MOUs with the different divisions in DEP, that is divisions of water supply, watershed management and land use regulation. We've also started working on an MOU with COA. With the assistance of our financial consultant, we've done an analysis of our accounts since the inception of the council. We've reached out to members of the Audit Evaluation Committee meeting, the Audit Evaluation Subcommittee, to set up a meeting for the review of an RFQ to solicit bids from the state list of accredited auditors to conduct an audit of Highlands accounts since startup. We continue to work on the TDR program, and we'll be doing some more analysis on that, and to work towards the TDR bank and capitalising of same. We also committed at our last TDR committee meeting to have a public meeting on the programme, and we will be doing that and setting forth those dates as well. Work plan to complete items committed to in the RMP has been outlined by the staff. This work includes, but is not limited to, priorities for preservation, plan conformance and project review standards, plan conformance grant guidelines, amending and finalising technical reports, transportation programmes, guidelines for critical habitat conservation, forest conservation, and a build-out analysis under the draft final RMP will be done in order to comply with plan endorsement requirements. We've also started a work plan to lay out future commitments for a science agenda, and we will be scheduling a plan development committee to review that work plan. The Budget and Finance Committee met, and I think the Chair will give you a report on that. They met January 10th and approved the Regional Master Plan budget. So Treasurer and Chair Bill Carbon will bring that to your attention. Natural Resources and Committee, as you know, met this morning, and the Personnel Committee will be meeting this afternoon. We've been doing a lot of municipal and county outreach and have been receiving a lot of requests to continue to do this. We believe it's been very successful. Since we've last met December 14th, we had our regular county planners meeting. December 18th, we had an informational meeting with Washington Borough in Warren County. December 20th, we had a meeting with the town of Clinton to discuss water management planning. They have a grant from us for that as well. January 7th, an informational meeting with Jefferson Township. January 11th, an informational meeting with Mount Arlington. State and federal agency coordination. December 19th, OSG and the Highlands had a meeting to discuss the guidelines for plan endorsement for our regional master plan. December 20th, we had a meeting with the Voorhees Transportation Centre to discuss transportation strategies for the regional master plan. December 21st, we had an OS, Office of Smart Growth Policy Team meeting. January 8th, we had meetings with DEP divisions of Water Supply, Watershed Management, and the Division of Land Use Regulation to discuss various issues relating to the RMP and coordination of efforts between us, also to discuss MOUs. January 11th, meeting with COA to discuss an MOU with them. Stakeholder coordination, we did a presentation on December 14th on the regional master plan to NJ New Jersey Future. December 18th, we had a meeting with the Society of American Foresters. December 19th, a meeting with New Jersey Highlands Coalition to discuss the land model. January 7th, we had a meeting with Plan Smart New Jersey to discuss some issues again relating to the regional master plan and some work that they might be interested in doing. January 10th, another meeting with New Jersey Highlands Coalition Natural Resources Committee. We've got many upcoming meetings, and actually since I put this out, January 15th, we met with Advanced Group, who are doing the marketing strategy for agrotourism grant for Sussex County. And on January 15th, which I guess was 2 nights ago, we did a presentation to ANJEC for environmental commissioners and municipal officials. They had 75 people in attendance from across the region. So it was very well attended, again, a very good meeting. Tonight, an informational meeting with Harding Township. And then, subsequent to that presentation to ANJEC, we've received, I think, at least another 4 requests for municipal outreach. So we're now scheduling out into the end of March these kind of meetings. So we're glad to be doing them. We think it's a wonderful opportunity to start that work with towns about talking about opt-in provisions and how conformance will work, and talking about the regional master plan as it applies to their particular community. So I think that brings an end to the executive director's report.
Okay.
Oh, I did want to, I'm sorry, Judy Thornton. I wanted to introduce you to Judy Thornton. Judy Thornton is a new employee of the Highlands Council. She's going to be, she's a principal planner leading on plan conformance issues. She comes to us with a wealth of experience in municipal planning, and that is something that we really wanted to bring to augment our truly excellent planning team. She's a professional licensed planner. She's had experience working with municipalities within the Highlands, such as Califon Borough. She's had experience with working on COA issues, and we stole her from another municipality. We're thrilled to have her on board. We think she's rounding out a great planning team. We've sort of divided the planning team into 2 major areas, one looking at plan development and working on issues related to that, the other working primarily on conformance issues, but of course the full team will pull together on all issues. But we welcome Judy. We're thrilled to have such a great person working for us.
Welcome, Judy. I had one question. The director, these 5 meetings that you held on agency coordination, as opposed to the presentations where no substantive decisions could be derived from those, were there any of those substantive decisions in the air as a result of those agency coordination meetings?
I don't know. What we really talked about at those issues were at those meetings where we reviewed the regional master plan with the different agencies, particularly the pertinent information as to how we would have to work into the future in coordination with them. Given that DEP is in the business of promulgating new rules, we wanted to make sure that they were aware of what the regional master plan says and then took that into consideration in their rulemaking procedure. So no decisions were reached. It was more talking about how we could work together and make sure that we're consistent with each other as we move forward. When we get to a time when we would be considering any MOU and drafting that, we would be bringing it back, of course, to the council before we would finalize anything.
I was particularly interested in the January 11th meeting with COA in the light of their new third-round rules that have been released. Was there some sense that one agency is going to have, as we said many times, primacy over another on that issue? And I know that Mr. Dillingham has expressed some concern about comments by the governor in that particular instance.
I think the comments were by the Commissioner of Department of Community Affairs.
Commissioner Doria. Oh,
okay.
Commissioner Doria.
I'm okay with the governor at the moment.
This was our first meeting with the executive director of COA and her counsel, Melissa Orson. So it was really the beginnings of a conversation. We wanted to talk about what our plan says, how it relates to COA. We wanted to talk about what the Act says, which is that COA must consider the regional master plan when considering third round certification. Am I correct, Rob? So we wanted to remind them of that, because then it becomes important how we work together into the future. We didn't talk substantively about their numbers. We know that their numbers have been released. Obviously, we talked to them about our build-out analysis, and in terms of if the region conforms to the regional master plan, it certainly would change the way perhaps those numbers would be considered. So we are beginning that conversation with COA and told them we'll be working with them on those issues.
It's a great concern to municipalities, especially those that had seen the first third round rules and had rested assured with an exhalation of breath that they had perhaps more units in the bank than they had expected to have. And now to have that completely upended is a tremendous concern to municipalities. And I wanted to ask you this question because I wondered if COA and we have reached some understanding as to what's going to happen in those towns that are affected by this, regardless of whether they opt in, even if they're in the planning area considering opting in. What is it going to mean to them? So are those discussions still to take place?
Those discussions are still to take place, yes.
I think one of the many major things we have to do this year is move forward with memorandums of agreement with COA and one or more with DEP and perhaps other agencies too, because there are all sorts of questions like that that are only going to begin to get addressed or resolved if we start to get the details down on paper.
At the meetings that I've been doing subsequent to the release of those numbers, at every meeting I've attended, there have been questions related to COA and concerns have been voiced about obligations and meeting them, and I've been just very clear as to what the RMP states and as to what the Act requires. And so we look forward to working with COA and coming up with an MOU so that we can give better clarity to the municipalities about how they'll be affected.
That would certainly be very helpful. I'm also concerned about the meaning or the interpretation of the word consider, when COA must consider the RMP and other agencies must consider. To what extent does consider have any teeth? On which side does it tilt? And I don't want you to answer that now because you probably can't, but I think that's, words have meanings, and yeah. I wanted to know what the meaning of that was in this context at some point.
And that's the purpose of the MOU, is to provide additional clarification for those races. I think we'll be wrestling with some of those words in a few minutes.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to remind again that I think that we have an issue with COA when it comes to the TDR program. And if we ask, or if a town agrees to increase density in some area in order to become a receiving area, are they then going to have to increase, will that affect their fair share? And they'll have to, increase the number of affordable units. And this discussion has been going on for a long while now, and I think we've got to come to an agreement with COA over that.
John, may I add something?
Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning, everyone. I've heard our council members refer to issues with the coordination with our regional master plan, which pertains primarily to the planning area. But as I understand it, these proposed rules are problematic with regard to the preservation area, that there are towns like West Milford that are entirely within the preservation area that have rather substantial third round requirements per these third round rules, which seem impossible to meet, and I would suggest that the council take a look at this, and rather than just have our staff talk to their staff, that the council should prepare should be providing formal comments on this to clearly to point out to everybody involved how these rules should be amended to accommodate not our regional master plan but the Highlands Act itself.
I don't want to get into a detailed discussion on COA right now because we have a major thing on the agenda that's going to take some time.
That's all I have to say.
No, thanks, David.
Are we anticipating doing formal comments on whether it's COA's rules or DEP's rules or otherwise, in addition to the conversations you're having about the MOUs?
We certainly could, if you like, because we did have some concerns with the language in the COA rules, just where it refers to the Act and doesn't refer to the regional master plan. We let them know about that already. But if you would like us to do that in a formal way, we will do so.
Well, I think it would be instructive, both for the council and the public, about our take on what the implications of those are, Just to echo Jack's comment earlier, you know, the other agencies, as they look at the import or the implications of the word consider, have gone to the Attorney General's office and asked for formal opinions. And I would like us to come to the table equally well-informed, shall we say, in those conversations.
Well, then we'll work on formal comments and get those to you on the COA rules.
Other comments, questions, Riley?
Eileen, I understand that Anthony or Cortese has left the staff, which I was sorry to hear.
Yes.
And so my question is, what's our plan for an economic person? We had Ross, who was the economic person. He left. Anthony was sort of the understudy, but had more planning experience, and he was sort of covering. And so, correct me if I'm wrong, but do we have any economic people on board now, that, or do we need to fill that hole?
Well, we will be looking to fill that hole, and then whenever we're looking, we have a couple of vacancies on staff, and whenever we look to fill them, we try to attract a broad group of applicants, and then dependent on their skill sets, you know, try to fit the needs of the organization. We do, however, have Lindsay Interlante on staff, who's she's our new grants manager, and she does have economic experience, so she'll be able to assist us in that. So we're looking out to fill that void. And I do just want to say Anthony left because he and his fiancée have moved to New York City, and he found it rather difficult to commute here from New York. We were sorry to see him go as well.
So there's an advertisement for the bus service from Gladstone Station. That should be on our transit component.
And Anthony's going to be working on COA issues in New York, so it'll be interesting to keep in contact with him and see how he handles that job.
But I'd just like to encourage you to please focus on the importance of an economics person, especially since one of the six mandatory provisions is the cash flow timetable and everything else. I just don't want to understate the importance of having that.
And we are continuing work, and that it is part of our work plan, and Lindsay is assisting with that. So we are continuing to work on it.
Thank you.
I also want to mention one personnel change that is not in the council, but may affect the council in various ways. Our first executive director, Adam Zellner, has left the Department of Environmental Protection, where he was deputy commissioner, and gone to the governor's office, where he is director of policy and planning in the governor's office. All right. No more questions for any? Let's go to committee reports, and let's do.
You may want to switch.
I do want to switch. I'm going to go to the Budget and Finance Committee first, Bill.
And we had a Budget and Finance Committee meeting. I guess the good news is that we've been able to reconcile all the expenditures since the beginning of time and carry it forward into our Quicken program. Rangi and our consultant have done a yeoman's job in terms of setting the record straight, and I know Eileen mentioned that we're now ready for an audit to take place. I think we'll be moving up into QuickBooks in the future. We'll be a little bit more robust. Our expenditures, as in the report, says that we have a balance of 60% for the remainder of the year, the operating budget, so we're in good stead. We've also have the regional master plan budget. If you look at that, you'll see that page 2 is blank. It's not because anybody forgot to put the numbers in. It's because we're negotiating. So when you negotiate, it's not always a good idea to tip your hand in terms of what you're anticipating. The gross numbers are there. The proposed projects are down there. It doesn't mean all of them will be funded. They're there on a rotating basis based on the priorities that are set by the council. So we're in good shape on the budget. And any other comments, Eileen?
No.
Any questions for Bill? Okay. All right. Natural Resources Committee may take slightly longer. And I don't know, Eileen, if you want to start, or Tim, or how you do this.
If I could just start with the way I started the Natural Resources Committee meeting, just to let you know that the Hunstring Knolls application and the Canfield application were seen twice by the Natural Resources Committee, and to explain the reason why. In the case of Hunstring Knolls, which is first on your agenda today, the Natural Resources Committee made its determination on Hunstring Knolls. The applicant subsequently called the officers on December 28th and said that they would be sending in a site plan information, which we didn't have when we reviewed the whole site the first time. and asked that we consider that. So we did take a look at that and advise the Natural Resources Committee today of our findings when we looked at the actual site plan. So that's why that was sort of revisited. And in the same way, Canfield development was also, when we looked at that first, it was under the, it was an application that we reviewed looking at the 2006 draft of the regional master plan. The Canfield development representatives were present at the Natural Resources Committee meeting where that was reviewed, and they asked that we consider new information that we weren't privy to that they felt was pertinent. At the Natural Resources Committee meeting, it was agreed that we would take that material, we would review it, and we also asked them at the same time to make sure that any additional information given to the Highlands Council would also be given to the Department of Environmental Protection, as this was an application before the Department of Environmental Protection, and that was done. The information was pertinent, was reviewed by the staff, and this time we did we looked at the application in terms of the 2007 draft, final draft plan. And so that's why both of these were looked at twice by the Natural Resources Committee.
And can I ask just maybe also just a little bit of context for the council, if Tom could speak to sort of what the nature of these reviews are. These are water quality management plan amendments referred to us by the Department of Environmental Protection. And if you just frame that for a bit, so I think it'll provide context for the conversation.
Sure. The issue actually is somewhat a statutory
Tim,
issue.
Tim, could you speak up a bit?
Sure, Debbie. The issue is somewhat a statutory issue and somewhat a regulatory issue. Much like we were describing with COA before, the Highlands Act actually amended various other state entities' jurisdiction to require an analysis of the regional master plan. So the Highlands Act actually specified that COA shall review the master plan in determining third round obligations. The DEP, as part of the Highlands Act rules, which they codified at 738, actually included language we suggested, the council suggested, regarding harmonization, such that water quality management plans would be examined in the light of the regional master plan. So DEP actually incorporated language in their Highlands Act rules, which apply both in the preservation area and the planning area, to require an analysis of consistency with the regional master plan for both the preservation area and the planning area. This is consistent with the State Water Quality Planning Act, which requires that DEP, because it's doing the planning for the state and water quality protection, ensure a continuing planning process that when regional plans come out, that they examine regional master plans and examine consistency with regional master plans. So DEP's rules actually specify that for both the preservation and the planning area, that they not act until recommendations are approved, given to DEP in both the planning and preservation area. As you may recall, this changes substantially when our master plan is adopted. So for the interim period until such time as the master plan is adopted, the DEP's regulations specify the department shall not approve a water quality management plan amendment in the preservation area or the planning area without first obtaining a recommendation from the Highlands Council. So our obligation in the interim period is to provide a recommendation to the DEP before they act. Once adopted, the standard of review essentially changes, such that the department shall not approve a water quality management plan amendment only after receiving from the Highlands Council a determination of consistency with the regional master plan. And they actually have incorporated our master plan by reference, such that when it's adopted, it is a part of their regulatory authority.
Can I just clarify who's on the phone? Debbie, you're still here? Debbie Pascarelli? Any other council members on the phone?
I'm here.
Okay, is there any other council member on the phone? Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, with that as background, we had three items on the agenda this morning. The first was a revision to the Water Quality Management Plan of Washington Township in Warren County for a project.
Could you speak up a bit, please?
For a project that is currently undergoing, under construction. It had some changes in terms of the components in it. There were no changes to the wastewater being generated by the project, nor changes to the footprint of disturbance. we had talked about it before, the way the council will review that will be have it reviewed by the National Resource Committee and a letter be done to the DEP with our recommendations in it, in which the council will have an opportunity to review for 10 days. And then if we want to bring that up to full discussion here, that's the prerogative of the members. The committee did recommend that the DEP approve the revision on the basis of the fact that it was a fairly, well, there were no changes to the flow, no changes to the footprint of disturbance. There were some comments from the public about the underlying geology, and we asked that they formally submit that from the Warren County Environmental Commission to the DEP for their consideration there.
So we will prepare that letter. We'll send it to all members of the council. You have the ability to call that up 10 days from receipt. We'll outline that in our letter to you. And if we do not get, if nobody calls it up within those 10 days, we'll send that letter down to DEP.
Any questions?
Okay, the second project, as Eileen said, the remaining two that were considered by the committee had been before us. And the project Huntington Knolls is in Holland Township in Huntington County. It was reviewed several times. The first time, in the absence of some site plan information, the applicants did submit that in early January. Staff reviewed it, and after looking at that, it determined that the proposed development presented conflicts with the draft RMP's policies on Highlands open water protection and 300-foot buffers, the steep slope policies, the protection of riparian areas around the Spring Mill Brook, which is a Category 1 stream, within the high-integrity forested sub-watershed and within portions of critical wildlife habitat for Cooper's Hawk. Additionally, the project did not meet the clustering requirements because of its location within an agricultural resource area. There was a fair amount of discussion about the process, considerations, information, but the committee in the end decided to stay with the recommendation we've already forwarded to the council. We recommend denial of this for not being in compliance with the RMP.
Maybe we should just discuss this now and then go to the rest of your report. So, so we have in our packets both the staff analysis for this project and a draft resolution which concludes with a blank space for the what the council's recommendation will be. So the committee's recommendation is that the recommendation would be essentially the conclusion of the staff memo.
That's correct.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. Before we begin to address the recommendation, Tom started out because I had raised an issue in the committee meeting earlier this morning, whether we should be saying we approve of the application or deny the application, or whether we should just point out where the application does not conform to the regional master plan and point out those issues. One, such as a simple one, would be the clustering. Say, in this area, it's in our regional master plan would require clustering on the property, and if they clustered, then we would be, that would satisfy that issue or whatever it happens to be. Identifying the issue and giving the applicant and the DEP not only the explanation for it, but possibly a resolution to it. And instead of coming down to the end and saying, deny this application, I think we shouldn't say deny or not. As Tom said, our duty is to do an analysis for consistency with the regional master plan, and then determine, based on the determination, determine the consistency with the plan, and make recommendations regarding the consistencies of the plan. I think we start, especially in the planning area, we're overstepping we're overstepping the bounds when we start telling the DEP to approve or deny applications. We're in an advisory role at this point on these applications. Excuse me. And I think that when we start, the DEP is looking at this in a different way than we are. We're looking at based on our regional master plan and nothing else. We're doing it in a vacuum. So it's easy for us to say it doesn't conform, deny it. But the DEP has other issues that it's got to determine on a project. If they deny an application and therefore the property becomes useless, has no economic viability, the DEP's got to take that into consideration on whether to grant the application, grant it with changes to it or not. And so they can look at it from a different perspective. And we're not, if we deny just out of hand without giving recommendations on how we can get past the issues or we're telling them just to deny it out of hand, I think we lose credibility with the DEP. I think we lose credibility with the applicant because we're not really doing what the DEP is eventually going to have to do when they look at the entire application and all the possible outcomes by their decision making. And I think that we would be much better served. We would be getting into a situation, we would be getting into a role that we're eventually going to be in if we were to review them for consistency.
Because this is an interesting, a number of us were there for the discussion in the committee hearing, in committee meeting earlier this morning. So the distinction is whether we would say the council has reviewed this application and finds it is inconsistent with the draft regional master plan for the following reasons, sincerely Highlands Council, or whether we say
we find these are the issues with it.
Or the second choice is we find it's inconsistent with the Highlands Regional Master Plan and believe it should be denied unless these inconsistencies can be rectified. And you're it, right? And that's
actually, we don't even say that last part of the sentence. We just say deny the application. I think
you're ignoring the first part of that. I mean, we would just say it's inconsistent, but we're not. Right.
Because there's more to it than just whether the consistency to it, the plan, whether it should be approved or denied. I think we're looking at it in a very myopic way that doesn't do us any good down the road.
Let me just get one question thing on the table. This isn't the first project we've reviewed, so we have submitted comments to the EP and maybe other agencies before. What have we been saying up until now?
We have used the language we recommend deny before.
Or approval.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, this has been bothering me. The way that we do this. And the other issue that I have is that since I'm up for re-election, I'm out without quite a bit. And I am constantly stopped by people with questions about what we're doing here. And they think that we are the almighty overlords of the Highlands, and that we've stopped all building in the Highlands. That's the perception out there. And I think that when we are in an area, in the planning area, where we don't have the legal right to tell an applicant that their application is denied at this stage of the game, I think that we just reinforce the misperception, the misconception out there that we don't want any building, that we don't want anything to happen at all, and that we're the ones stopping everything that's going on there. And I don't think our role is to say no to all development. Our role is to make sure that the planning is done properly, and it's done in to meet the goals of the act. We're going to run into situations where things don't meet our plans, and we're going to have to make a decision whether to approve or deny applications eventually down the road. And there's going to be more factors than just whether they comply or not. I don't think we're doing ourselves any good at this stage of the game just because something's inconsistent. They didn't cluster enough. They're at 79% and not 80% cluster, and we say deny it. The application. I think we look somewhat foolish when we do something like that. I think we should make recommendations to the DEP in a consulting aspect of it and leave it at that and let the DEP make the decision which they're charged to make right now.
I think it's a very fine line, the distinction. I understand the intent behind what you're saying, but the language Tom read a little earlier from the Act is that we are to make a recommendation to DEP or whatever agency. It doesn't say an analysis, but we're to recommend. So if we say, as I understand what you would advocate, that we would say this is inconsistent with the plan, but we don't have an opinion whether you should approve or deny it.
I don't have the regulation, but I wrote down what Tom said. And said I heard him say that the regulation said that we're supposed to do an analysis of the consistency with the regional master plan, not an approval or denial of the application.
I thought recommendation.
This recommendation is the term pending adoption of the plan.
Pending the adoption.
So in other words,
during this period before the plan is adopted, we would make a recommendation.
It's a recommendation on DEP's decision whether or not to adopt a proposed WQFD amendment.
How did we handle Mansfield Township? What was the wording that we used? Did we approve and included recommendations that we wanted them to follow? How did we word
it? In my mind, there's two ways of resolving the matter, and it's a matter of semantics. Either recommending that you only approve the amendment until such time as the inconsistencies are satisfied, or another way of putting it, which is really the same thing, that you deny the amendment until such time as the inconsistencies are resolved. But either way, it's a recommendation that the matter not be advanced until such time as the inconsistencies are resolved.
But how did we do Mansfield?
We can dig up the letter, as I recall, as not approved until such time as the inconsistencies are resolved.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
I'd just like to weigh in on a couple things here. I understand the concern, your concern, Eric, about the perceptions of the public. But I want to say, first of all, I don't think we should be shy about fulfilling our responsibilities and making definitive decisions because of how somebody might perceive things. Our staff is doing a tremendous amount of work on the ground to meet with municipalities, to outreach to the public in order to explain to municipalities and general public, counties, exactly what the implementation of this plan means and what we're doing in the meantime. So I think all our efforts on that in terms of public perception are really carried out more appropriately through our public education and outreach efforts, not through what may be interpreted by actions that we take. I think that, second of all, we're not doing this in a vacuum. I disagree with you on that. We are doing our review in terms of a determination of consistency with the RMG based on a tremendous body of data and a plan that we've put together for years now and which carries with it a tremendous amount of weight in terms of data richness. And it's our responsibility to make a determination of consistency. Those are the words that Tom read from our charge in the Act, and then make a recommendation based on that determination of consistency. So we're not operating in some amorphous world. We have a very specific charge. And I believe that by fooling around with the semantics of whether we say we recommend that it be denied or we find it inconsistent and you do what you want, is really beyond the public. I think that all that does is play around with trying to dodge our duties and trying to soften our approach in a very semantic way. And in fact, we need to make explicit, unambiguous, very defined decisions in order to help the applicant and the municipality and to make it very clear to DEP and the public what we really have found in doing a very careful determination in regards to consistency. That's what our staff is doing. They're doing a lot of work. We spent a lot of time on developing, you know, the checklist and how we carry these things out. And I think that's the tools that we use. They're pointed, and we just, you know, move ahead.
Okay. I'd like to get this. I mean, this it's semantics, so let's focus on words. And what I'd like to do is ask Tim if you wanted to make a motion on Huntington Knolls. And then we can, you know, Eric or if someone else wants to make an amendment to that, we can discuss a different way of wording and have a vote, because
there may be two opinions at most, at least.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion that we transmit to DEP a recommendation that we deny, that they deny the permit, the water quality management planning amendment for Huntington Knolls.
Second.
And just as a matter of standard operation, I think that we always do include our analysis, the checklist, the very specific details, as well as any pertinent summaries of public input that we've collected during our consideration.
So would you want to add to that denial unless it can be changed, maybe brought into consistency with the...
I think, let's go to semantics. Okay. I think it's very important that we be rigorous in the use of our discretion and really review these projects for better or for worse against the standards and policies that are in place. And I think, as far as the public's perception goes, that government agencies and elected officials get in trouble when they go outside of that very strict construction. I think when you read these analyses, you read these staff reports, they are very specific. They cite the policies, they cite the factors. In that, in order for these projects to be brought into compliance, they can redesign the projects so that they meet those inconsistencies. There's a roadmap laid out for them as to how to make them consistent. So I think it's ad hominem to say until such time it's doing. I think conditional approvals, at least in my experience with government, you know, run the risk of not being observed. All people hear is you approve this. And in fact, in some of the conversations this morning, we had testimony that work has started, that people have undertaken things, that there are misperceptions. So I think clarity is very important for people not misunderstanding what our position is on this.
So the motion has been made and seconded that we tell DEP we've reviewed the application and we recommend
denying.
No, not right now. Thank you.
Chairman.
Later. Before we have a vote, we'll have a vote.
If I can just follow up on Tim's last statement, I agree that people only read one thing, and it'd be the same thing that I only read, would only be reading that we denied it. And I think the point is that we are hoping that they do come in compliance with it.
Exactly.
I think we're just trying to strengthen and balance what our position is.
So does somebody want to make an amendment for it? What do you have there, Tom?
That's the point of reference. Okay. We dug up the Mansfield, and we did categorize recommending the DEP approve contingent upon resolution of the consistency.
Exactly.
Okay.
I think that's what you're
like
referring to, right?
I think it's appropriate.
I'd like to move that language as an amendment to.
What language?
So we're talking about this. Let's do it in the specific context of Huntington Knolls. So rather than the amendment would be rather than recommending denial, it would be
contingent upon the remediation language.
It would be approval rather than to me. We recommend it be approved.
I just recommend if we say something simple as, you know, list all of the inconsistencies and then say that we recommend that these inconsistencies be resolved prior to approval.
Were you starting to make an amendment? Or are you?
Yes.
And what was your amendment?
My amendment is the language that Tom read for Mansfield.
But that's a different motion. Mr. Chairman, yeah. I think if we're going to change the motion, then we need to have a vote.
Well, it would be an amendment. It would be an amendment. I mean, it would
to change it from deny to approve?
Well,
that's quite an amendment.
That is.
Mr. Chairman, this argument about not wanting to soften the language, I think, is a spurious one. There is the letter of the recommendation. There is the checklist. But there is also the Highlands Council. Without an interpretation, without an ability to say certain things about remediating the situation and bringing the municipality into conformance with the original master plan, we might as well go home. There's no need for us to be here. What we're trying to do here, I think, is to accommodate to the extent possible by changing certain parameters. And I don't know, and I haven't heard in this morning's meeting, what role Holland Township has played in this process, other than submitting information. Have they been, have they had the discussion with us on what they might need to do to be into conformance or be consistent with our requirements at this point? Have they said no, absolutely no to that? Or have they said the door is still open? There might be a way that they could change that. So if the latter is the case, then I think the language of that Tom read would be perfectly appropriate. That's what the council is here to do.
Just like sort of qualitative thing, this project is significantly out of compliance. There are fundamentally inconsistencies with the central policies of the RMP. So this is not, and in fact, the staff has worked with other applicants when they've been willing to do that, and the other applications before us, to look where those inconsistencies can be minimized. But we are at a point where it is way out of compliance, I guess is one way to put that. And I don't think the council has an obligation, or at least the obligation only goes so far, to try to find ways to facilitate these developments when they're inconsistent with the RFP. That's our obligation, is to be true to the plan, and be true to the policies that the plan contains that are necessary to protect the region.
John?
I think there was a sort of tipping point issue. There are there are two kinds of projects, at least, and maybe they're both before us today, but there are projects where, as Tim said with this one, where it is clearly not in conformance with the Highlands plan, and it would take radical or take major action, major changes to bring it into conformance. And there are others where it's tipping the other way, and it's tilting toward conformance, but there are some changes, revisions that would need to be made to bring it to full conformance, and that we might want to, I don't think, for me, that I don't want to say every project we review, we recommend approval, and then in some cases we have major conditions, in some cases we have minor conditions. I think there are some where we would want to say, as we did with Mansfield, where we were saying, essentially, we felt this should be approved, that it should be approved some contingent upon the following things, or contingent upon being brought into full conformance with the plan. And there are others where we would want to say it should be denied unless it can be brought into conformance with the plan.
Mr. Chairman, with due respect to your comments, if it's so far away from conformance or consistency with the plan, then that language will do no harm.
Which language?
The language that says that if you come into inconsistency with the plan, then you can be approved. If it's so far out of whack, and that's not going to happen, where's the danger? It's benign.
Well, the danger is that our comments then are all the same. With the Highlands Council is then always saying, approve this project, and then you have to go to the second phrase to figure out what we're really saying. Our message is much less clear.
My whole point has been that we're really just making recommendations. We're not making a decision on the application. When we say approve or denied, we're coming to a conclusion about the entire application and not our one area on it. We're only one aspect of the entire application that's being made to the DEP. We should only be commenting on our aspect of it, which is these are the problems with our aspect of this entire application, not deny the entire application because there's issues on our one aspect of it that we don't conform.
I think we're in agreement that the word approve or recommend is always there. We're recommending the following action, and the agency to whom we're making that recommendation may have other factors they need to take into account that would lead them to a different decision. Kurt, you start.
Is there a way we can get this up on the board so we can just visually see the environmental constraints that exist on this piece?
Mr. Chairman,
can we just pull our...
Can I ask? I think we did, Kurt. Didn't we at the last meeting? I think we
did this at the Natural Resources Committee meeting.
But we're considering it on the council level. I think it's important for us. This is a good case study to see where the rubber hits the road. Let's get this thing up and let's see. Are we talking about 87 acres that has 86 acres constrained? What is the scope of what we're looking at? Are we talking about a project that recommends X number of units when really with our master plan as it's proposed right now, does it result in perhaps the only viable project having one unit? I don't know these answers, but I'd sure love to see it on the board.
My understanding, and if I'm wrong, is that the two projects we have before us this morning, that the Natural Resource Committee has reviewed both of them extensively, and on this one, the committee was, I think, unanimous in recommending that it not go forward unless it's going to be.
That is correct.
That it's out of conformance with the plan. On the second one, we will consider the committee was split on that.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask though, in the committee hearings, the applicant was there. Now you addressed the inconsistencies. Were they asked if they can bring the plan into conformance with those inconsistencies, or bring those inconsistencies into conformance? Were they asked that?
I asked that question this morning in the committee meeting, very similar to that. Can we pause and ask for a little bit more information?
But that was for the other project, not for this one.
It's true, right. But it's the same
right.
question. Well, Mr. Chairman, whether those exact words were asked, I don't remember, because actually the first hearing meeting that we had was quite a while ago on this. But I would just like to point out that we spent many hours on the Natural Resource Committee reviewing this in two meetings, and with comments from the applicants and from the public, and so we had, and the staff has done an extensive review the first time around, and then the applicants said they had more information that they thought would clarify some things where they felt they were not inconsistent. They provided that information, and that was weighed against the RMP and the decision that was made before, and it was found that there was no change. So the areas that are out of compliance or not consistent with the RMP include 300-foot buffers, steep slopes, riparian area, high-integrity forested sub-watershed, critical wildlife habitat, as well as cluster development. It's a huge inconsistency here in many areas. Now, I think what,
except, Tracy, what Kurt was saying, the 300-foot buffer, how far out of whack is it from that requirement? Is it just a little bit, or is it a lot?
Can't we just put the lot on the screen? What's so hard about that? We have the technology. Let's just put it on the screen.
If this were a planning board hearing, there would be give and take and talk with the applicant, and can we make this work and all? I don't know if that went on.
We can show this on the screen, but I do want to say that the attorney for the applicant did speak this morning and did categorically state that they did not argue with the technical findings of the committee and of the staff. He specifically said that he did.
If this were a planning board hearing, it would be definitive end to the thing. And I think that if you make a recommendation that says approves depending upon the following acts, if I were reviewing that, I would be inclined to look at that as a matter of incorporating that. If I got a recommendation that said deny based upon these facts, my inclination would not be to overrule another organization unless I had pretty clear indicators that these things have been brought into compliance. And I think that it's a mistake if you think that the DEP is going to not take deny as a serious issue when they review the plan, and somehow they're going to say, oh, okay, fine. You approved it or you denied it. We're just going to make a different ruling. I don't think that's the case. So I think if you're not definitive in what you say, that you're not giving the applicant closure, and I don't think you're sending a clear message to the DEP. You can put all the contingencies you want on it, but I think you have an obligation to say, based on what we've seen, we recommend that it be denied until these things are dealt with, or approved until these things are dealt with. So I agree with John, sir.
Let me go to what Kurt's question, because I'm not sure of the process here, because we have a staff recommendation on this project. We have a unanimous recommendation from the subcommittee that it's inconsistent with the plan. And if we as the council are then going to engage in a full analysis of the project again, this isn't going to work on going forward. I mean, I don't think we can look at every project that way. And on the other hand,
Mr. Chairman, yeah. I think we're missing the point. I don't disagree with Bill. If we were the planning board making the ultimate decision, we're not. The DEP makes the ultimate decision in this. All we're doing is making recommendations based on the consistency of the project with our regional master plan. Where the DEP didn't say, we want the Highlands Council to tell us whether we should approve or disapprove of it. It said make recommendations about the consistency, make an analysis of the consistency and make recommendations based on that. Not approve or deny. We're not making the final determination on the plan. And it may seem like to some that it's semantics. But in the world of politics, which is where this really goes to, words have meaning. Our staff is going out and doing a wonderful job getting our message out. But when we do certain things, when we approve or deny something that we have that's in a planning area where we have no right to approve or deny, the people from Holland Township who are here that are on that township council, and one of them's left. they go back and they say, we denied it, or we approved it, and that to them, that is an indication of whether they're going to opt in to plan or not based on how we handle what authority we have now. I'd rather remain within our authority, which is to make a recommendation regarding an analysis of the consistency with the plan, which is we've reviewed the plan. These are the issues that we've come up with on the plan. I'd rather not even say whether it should be approved or denied, but these are inconsistencies with our plan, and we believe that they should be dealt with. Period. That's it. End of story. And then move forward. Let the DEP do their job, which is to approve or deny the application. And when I said it was in a vacuum, what I meant is that there's other considerations in the entire process.
So let me
ask, we don't have before us.
So do you support Jack's amendment that would say the recommendation should be we recommend the council recommends approval of this project provided these issues are addressed? Is that my understanding of your amendment?
Tom, could you read that?
Yeah, it was contingent upon, but I think only provided that the inconsistencies are addressed is another way of phrasing it.
So the council's recommendation under your amendment would be the council recommends approval contingent upon
if and when, or something of that nature. Let Tom figure out.
You know, what I think is tough about this one is that this one really is a no-brainer. I mean, we're not close to the middle on this one. There is a lot of constraints.
By saying
let Scott finish.
Approve or deny,
Jack.
I think that
we did. Go ahead.
Wow. So that was my reasoning in the committee meeting. I had no problem with a denial on this one because I think there's probably some insurmountable constraints here. The next application, probably we're doing these out of order. My mind as a longtime planning board member was thinking that the next one could be one where we're a little closer to the middle, and that usual negotiation that takes place at the planning board level would take place, and then you would have some of the de minimis rules that we can be flexible a little, the developer can flex a little, and somehow there'd be some agreement. That's the one that I would want to make sure that the DEP understood, that we felt that there could be some concessions, that there could be some consideration, and there needed to be some flexibility. And those are the applications that I'm concerned that when they just look at it, to just state what Tim says, they only see one word. They only start with, you know, if the staff member's going fast and he's just looking down quick, which we hope and we know doesn't take place, that he's only seeing one word, whether it be approved or denied. Because I think the next application is the one where this conversation means more. Here, this one, it really, in my mind, doesn't.
Chairman, I think we are being somewhat precedential, setting a precedent in this particular application for the next one and for ensuing ones. If we take the approach that we are going to approve or deny and use that language, then we are approving and denying, and it's either guilty or not guilty. And I think, for the sake of the rest of the act and the rest of the plan, that we would be better to err on the side of approving with conditions, which is what we're talking about. Because there is much more to the plan and much more to the act than simply this particular portion that the Natural Resources Committee has been dealing with. I think it's
Mr. Chairman?
Just a minute, Debbie, go ahead.
I think it's an important step for us to take in the light of everything that we will be doing in the future.
Let me just understand where we are, or clarify where we are. So Jack has an amendment to Tim's motion that would say, rather than say we recommend denial of this project, it would say we recommend approval of the project contingent upon the applicant coming into conformance with all the issued outlined memo. Is there a second to Jack's amendment?
I'll second.
Okay. Debbie?
John, could you ask Tom to, and for my sake, really loud and clear in the microphone, repeat the language of the act that directs the activities of the council relative to this matter?
Sure. Again, this is not from the act. This is from DEP's regulations. And it bifurcated the approval process, differentiating upon adoption of the plan this different language. But for where we are now, just to deal with where we are now, the department shall not approve a Water Quality Management Plan Amendment for a project proposed in the planning area or preservation area without first obtaining a recommendation from the Highlands Council.
Okay, so it doesn't say a recommendation of approval with conditions, and it doesn't say a recommendation on consistency. It says a recommendation, which I think a reasonable person could understand to mean a recommendation relative to the action that the DEP would take on this project.
Well, I should add,
and if we look at that, it's very clear the recommendation shouldn't be an approval with conditions in this case. And as Scott pointed out, you know, maybe every one of these is unique, but it should be, we've looked at this, we've looked at consistency, we've looked at the extent of the inconsistency, and we've rendered a recommendation to DEP as to the action they're going to take, which is a denial or an approval. And I think anything short of that, we're not complying with those regulations, and we're not doing our job.
Thanks, Tom.
This process has become extremely political, and we're doing a disservice to everybody involved by making this as political as it's become. We should just be doing what our job is.
So I just want to add the opening sentence of the regulation, which says, for both the planning area and preservation areas, the department shall review the Highlands Council Regional Master Plan and consider amending the appropriate area water quality management plans to maintain consistency with the Regional Master Plan. And then they go on to bifurcate the fact that consistency is differential upon adoption, and prior to is a recommendation of consistency.
Okay. I couldn't hear that last part, Tom.
The regulation essentially bifurcates the process by which they'll examine consistency as prior to adoption as a recommendation and after adoption as a statement of consistency. So in either which case I'm saying is that consistency of the master plan is the guiding principle. It's a recommendation before adoption of the plan, recognizing the plan isn't final.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please.
It seems to me that the DEP is asking whether this is consistent or not. Either is it or is it not? It's yes or no. And, you know, if it's not consistent with our plan, I think that's what they want to hear.
John?
Yeah.
Following up on Scott's point, Debbie's point, I think the hard thing here is that we really don't know what the extent of inconsistency is. And I think if we're going to send recommendations to the DEP, how can we not outline the extent? For instance, you know, we have just yeses and nos here for each of the issues.
Sir, do you have the staff memo that's dated December 2nd?
I have. I'm looking at the review checklist is what I'm looking at right now.
But if you also look at the staff memo, I think that's dated December 2nd to the Natural Resource Committee and the Council.
Yes. So, for instance, if you take steep slopes, how much of the site is constrained by slopes of greater than 20%? Is it 1 acre? Is it 20 acres? You know, how much of the proposed project impacts the severely constrained slopes? When you talk about agriculture, we've identified that there's agricultural lands that have the correct soils there, but is there 1 acre of that? Is there 50 acres of that? And how much of the proposed project impacts that? Critical habitat for the hawk, I think, is here. Is the entire site a critical habitat, or is there a pocket of 4 acres, and how much of the project impacts that 4 acres? Because it seems to me if we're going to make a recommendation, and I think it follows up on Scott's point of, well, you know, one project is right on the line, another project was way on the wrong side of the line, we should be telling the DEP, well, it's right on the line, and here's the analysis to back it up, so that they have an idea of whether it's just a little tweaking that is necessary to make this thing right and in compliance, or whether this thing is so grossly away from the master plan that it could never be in compliance.
Okay. Do you want to address that, or?
My concern listening to this is we do that analysis. We do it with the Natural Resources Committee. We did it twice in this case. We did show on the screen all the constraints on this. I understand what Kurt is saying.
However, this gets back to the issue of, do you want to do this twice all the time? And maybe we should have a separate council meeting where you review these and not have the Natural Resources Committee do it and then ask the exact same questions and ask us to go through the same analysis. We can absolutely do it, but we need meetings dedicated to these reviews if this is what we are going to do. And definitely, I will say, from the staff perspective, that it would be very difficult to see, after the analysis we've done and the very different types of projects we're seeing, to sort of take a one-size-fits-all approach of approve with the following conditions.
But my understanding of the answer to Kurt's question on this project is that this is not a question where it's a matter of tweaking. It's a question of
this
an
is
issue
absolutely
where
not a matter
where it's
of
a significant non-conformance of the plan.
Well, I'm saying we should say that, then, is what I'm saying. If there's a big difference, I think we need to communicate that clearly to the DEP that
well, I think that's why Scott was advocating against Jack's amendment, was to, in this case at least, to say it should be denied, as opposed to saying...
Understood, but why do we want to try to find the right words to use when we can make the recommendation using numbers? And that's my point. If this thing is, you know, 90% of the product encroaches on riparian buffer strips, then say, you know, we don't approve this project because, you know, 90% encroaches on riparian buffers, because 80% of the project is critical habitat, because 30% of the project encroaches on critical
slopes. I want to go around. Let's go around the room once, and every council member can speak, and let's vote on this amendment, because I think we have different points of view, and nobody's going to change their mind.
I'm kind of going to echo, I think, what Kurt is getting at. You know, I read these reports, and I'm sure that the committee and the staff did a great job in reviewing this, but the disturbances are not quantified, so that we don't really know. If you ask me to vote on this, I don't know really what I'm voting on. How far out of being consistent is this in any of these things? It says that it's serious, but if this were done in a manner where we said how many acres are there in steep slopes, you know, how far out of consistency are the buffer areas to any kind of waterways, things like that, that would make this clear and probably make it more meaningful to the DEP. So maybe we have to produce the results of our analysis differently so that, you know, that it's quantified and we as the council understand better how bad it is, and also that make it easier for the DEP to understand it.
Mr. Chair, if it will help this process at this time and in the sake of time efficiency, I'll withdraw my motion for the amendment. And let's vote up or down on the original amendment if you choose to do that. And then we can discuss subsequently where we want to go after that.
Before we do that, Mr. Chairman, can I make a point? Because the dynamics of what we're discussing all comes back to approval and deny. Kurt's problem on whether we approve or deny.
But the important word you keep leaving out is that we recommend approval or deny.
But here's it's those two words. Kurt's problem is he doesn't have enough information to make that decision. If we're going to have a committee that's going to make, then we don't need the committee, because if we're going to make the decision, I think everybody here doesn't want to make that a decision without full information. The Act doesn't give us the legal right to make that decision in the planning area now until they opt in. The DEP regulation is a regulation that's not, it's the DEP regulation is for them to, on the DEP, to request information from us. It doesn't say, you read the regulation, it doesn't say that they ask for us to, whether they should approve or deny the application. They ask for recommendations regarding the consistency of it.
Right, but
our plan.
I think I need to clarify one thing if I could. The Act sets up a framework by which state agency coordination and consistency with the regional master plan is independent from municipal conformance. So just like for COA, for various permits issued by DEP, is that irrespective of municipal action, state agencies are going to coordinate their activities consistent with the regional master plan, irregardless of municipal decision-making process. So the law does require state agencies to have a coordination and consistency process, irregardless of the municipal decision. So it's important to note that.
And irregardless of planning or preservation.
Yes, of course, because preservation areas is mandatory and planning areas is voluntary. So it's an important distinction. So the law does require state agencies to coordinate their planning. The water quality, that's what I was saying before, the Water Quality Planning Act does specifically require a continuing planning process. So we really do have to put aside the municipal decision on voluntary conformance as a separate issue. This is about extending sewers, not about conformance.
I understand what you're saying, but I believe that they're looking for consistency with the plan, which is everything, is the key term there.
But not with respect to this project, not with respect to municipal conformance. That's the biggest issue.
With respect to that project, consistency, okay? There's a difference between making recommendations so it's consistent with our plan than giving approval or denial. And if we, I don't see where we have the right to approve or deny. It's all about whether this is consistent with our plan or not. And what, why is it not consistent is really what we're being asked to recommend. If it's consistent, we say it's completely consistent with the plan. If we say it's not consistent, here's where it's not consistent. There's nothing in there that's asking us to tell the DEP whether they should approve or deny the plan. It's whether it's consistent with the plan. That's the key term. We don't have the authority to approve or deny that application. And I can understand people say, well, that could be a recommendation to that. But and maybe it sounds like maybe to some that doesn't seem different than just making the recommendations. But it is a difference. I believe it is a significant difference whether we say it should be approved or denied. That's a big difference, because if I was going back to the DEP and you gave me approval and the DEP didn't want to, I'd be yelling and screaming how we approved it. And that, you know, we have, you can argue it both ways there. I think that that's not what the intent was. The intent was to make sure where are we not consistent? Because my understanding is the DEP says that we have certain information that they don't have and an expertise in this area that they don't have, and they want us to point out whether this is consistent or inconsistent with the plan, and what are those inconsistencies, so that the DEP can use that in their decision-making whether to approve or deny the application. If we're going to approve or deny it, then it's going to have to be the full council hearing the whole thing. And quite frankly, I'm not sure that's where we want to go. If it's the committee going through and reviewing the consistencies and inconsistencies and then going through and listening and making recommendations, then I can see this body then voting whether they agree with what the staff came up with in the committee review or not. Otherwise, just might as well open up an extra day a month where we do all these applications.
Mr. Chairman?
If the council approved a resolution saying we passed a resolution telling DEP that this project is inconsistent with the Highlands Regional Master Plan, period, and one of the reporters in this room or the commissioner of DEP called me up and said, what is the council saying DEP should do? I would say, we're saying the county DEP should deny the project unless they can bring it into conformance with the master plan.
Well,
we're not saying the master plan is a neutral document. We don't care about it. We're saying we believe, we've put a lot of work into it, we believe is a good document and valuable, and based on our analysis, this project is not consistent with the plan. And DEP or another agency can say, well, we disagree with your analysis, or we have to take other factors into account, and therefore we're making a different decision. But it's in effect what we're saying. It's not, I mean, there's got to be some action attached to what we're saying, or it's not, there's no point in saying it. I mean, there's some action we're recommending.
I think we're providing information. I don't think we're providing approval or denial.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Were we going around? So
we were. So
maybe we can finish that process.
Well, we're a little confused now, because Jack took back his amendment. So we now have on the table Tim's motion to deny the application. So go ahead, we'll go around, and then we'll get the public comment.
I support that we use definitive language, and we recommend that this project, Water Quality Management Plan Amendment, be denied. And I base that on the fact that this project is grossly out of compliance with the Regional Master Plan. If you look at the December 2nd report that's in our packet, as well as the January 12, 2008 report. The staff very clearly lays out the environmentally sensitive lands that are identified in the RMP that this project is inconsistent with. And they include, as I said before, the steep slopes, riparian areas, open waters, forests, critical habitat, agriculture, water quality, and the clustering provision. And I think one thing we need to recognize.
Can I get council's attention to listen to?
And I think one thing that we should recognize here is the staff has been very careful in their reviews to identify when they can see how possible changes could be made in order to bring the project into compliance. And they've identified that, and you'll see that very clearly in the next example that we're going to look at. And they only say deny when it is judged that there is really no change, because this is such a so far out of compliance that it could be brought into compliance. So that's when they recommend denial. And I think we need to recognize that we're saying, we will be providing the backup information to DEP, as we do with all of these that we've reviewed so far. And in that backup information, DEP will be able to understand, is it 1 foot into the 300-foot buffer, or is it 299 feet into the riparian buffer? Those distinctions and that information will be available to DEP, and certainly they're not going to be looking at deny, approve in a vacuum. So I think that we should be definitive. We should step up to the plate and take on the responsibility we've been charged with, make clear and concise recommendation for denial here. And I think that will benefit everybody. And when we're clear, we do away with the ambiguous nature that has surrounded too much of the water quality management plan review process across the state.
Tracy.
So,
we're charged with making a recommendation. Recommendation is a decision. However you want to treat it semantically, deny, approve, inconsistent, consistent, it's still a decision. Our charter is to provide information. We're wasting our time here. Send the packet of information, the applicant, to DEP. We shouldn't even discuss it. If that's the only reason that we're here is to provide information, we're wasting a whole lot of time. I think we're charged with making a decision. And that decision, whatever the semantic term you want to use, is a decision. Now, you can couch that by saying, well, if you do these things, maybe we'll change our mind. But you're still charged with making a decision.
Anyone else on this side want to speak?
Well, I really feel that we provide the human factor to this whole thing. If the staff were to create, based on our RMP, a spreadsheet of every parameter that's looked at in coming to a determination, and at the end of the day, everyone that did not, you know, if we had yes, no, 79%, and any one of them that was not consistent came up as a red, you know, in this application, there's a bunch of squares that are red. So it's really, like I said, I don't have a problem with the denial, but it's the one where I know we're only going to have one small item. I want to find wording that will satisfy that, and whether you want to hear it or not, whether it's got to be a third thing that the DEP hears from us. This one, I have no problem with denying, because I don't think they could come into, and it's just my feeling on that, I know they couldn't come into consistency, but it's the ones that are close. And that's why people are digging in on this one, because we know how important it is going to be for applications that even later on this morning.
Well, I wanted to ask Tracy, you know, you said that the final report that will go to the DEP will state how far out of compliance they are, right?
It'll have details, yes.
It'll have the details. And maybe if we're asked to vote on this, we should know this. Now, Scott says he knows how bad it is. We really don't.
We have the checklist.
We have the checklist.
We have the staff checklist.
We
have the staff
analysis. And I think it's right. You have to.
But it doesn't show the quantities, how bad it is.
Chairman, I'd like to just suggest something, not necessarily an amendment, but suggest it for consideration by the council. Because I think we're focusing on guilt or innocence, yes or no, here, I think it might be helpful to the process if we say something along the lines that Scott has just indicated, and as I think you said, if the DEP phoned you and asked you for what we meant by that, that we should put a little explanation in with the recommendation or denial. that we recommend that this application be denied because in our consideration, and as the checklist will indicate, it's grossly out of consistency.
That's what we do.
Can I speak to that just for 1 second? Because I think we want to be clear that in our reviews of this, that we are measuring the applications against the standards and the policies that are in the RMP, that we're not being arbitrary. And I think when you start to introduce the idea of, well, how much out of compliance can you be and still get under the bar and be approved? Do we lose 50% of the habitat? Do we cover 90% of the agricultural land? We don't have a policy that says that that's acceptable to us. We have a set of policies that say, stay out of these areas, cluster at this percentage. The council has debated long and hard. The committee and the staff are measuring these applications objectively against those, and we are having qualitative discussions about how to come into compliance, what the degree of impact is. But I don't think you want the committee to be making those kind of decisions absent the council's affirmation of some variance procedure. So that may be a policy discussion to happen down the road, but that introduces politics in my mind into this process that we don't want to have it. And I hope the council will set itself up to be objective in terms of whether you like our policies or not, which are clearly crowds on either side of that question. That when we do these reviews, we're doing them transparently, we're doing them against objective standards that people understand what compliance requirements are, and we're articulating how we make that decision.
So let me ask this, would you accept language to say that we recommend the project, we recommend the application be denied unless it can be brought into conformance with the Highlands Regional Master Plan? Unless it can be revised to be brought into conformance with
I think that's unnecessary language, and I think that if the applicant wants to go back and redesign the project and bring it into compliance, that's clearly within their prerogative to do that.
Let me ask for public comment on this specific application.
Excuse me, John, I thought we were going around the room.
Oh, we were. I didn't see you there. I'm sorry. Raise your hand.
Right. Smack that guy.
Yeah. Debbie?
Yeah, I would just like to add to the 3 points to this, listening to what everybody had to say. I think we need to keep in mind that the motion that Tim has recommended is not an overstepping of our bounds, and to say we don't have the authority to deny an application, so we shouldn't make a recommendation for denial, I think just doesn't hold water. It's a recommendation, and the DEP is going to make the final decision no matter what we say. But it relates to my second point, which is our recommendation has to be meaningful. If I were a DEP official and I got a recommendation that says it's inconsistent with the master plan or the act or whatever, my answer would be, so what? So what are they saying here? It's not meaningful just to say inconsistent. And again, the regulation that Tom read did not ask for, it did not define our role to be a determination of inconsistency. It was to make a recommendation. And last but not least, I'm thinking, listen to this discussion about how we maybe want to provide more information to the applicant or to the DEP. I would suggest we add another whereas to this motion, or to the resolution. Something to the effect of whereas, you know, the subcommittee, the staff, and you can even refer to specific documents, has determined or assessed or whatever words you want to use that there's a consistency of a significant magnitude. That would actually suffice, I think, for what some people are suggesting we do to alter the language, maybe not of the action, but of the whereas. That's it.
Okay. Let me ask for public comment on this specific application. Which is a proposed amendment to the Upper Delaware Water Quality Management Plan for Huntington Knolls and Holland Township. How many people would like to speak on this specific application? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Debbie, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Happy New Year. I'm Sylvia Kovacs, Warren County Environmental Commission. With regards to using the man's...
Use the mic straight.
Sorry. With regards to using the Mansfield recommendation, I would just caution this council on relying on the language from the Mansfield recommendation as the basis for your standard operating procedures. While I was not at the Natural Resources Subcommittee meeting that discussed the Mansfield project due to a conflict with another meeting, I did attend the full council meeting that had only the representation of the township engineer, who in fact represented a position of the Hackettstown Municipal Utility Authority that upon meeting with the executive director and subsequently attending all of the HMUA board meetings addressing that project put forward just the opposite of what was represented here. The HMUA's facility is in the treatment facility is in the preservation area and therefore cannot be expanded. It was brought up at that full council meeting that the project site was not in either an exist. I'm sorry.
You're not talking about the project before us. You're talking about the Mansfield project, right?
But you really need to be paying attention to whether or not you use the language of conditional approval or denial with regards to the information that you get before this board. Granted, the Mansfield Township was the first one that came before you, but you really need to be looking at whether or not it was an the different environmental constraints that move this any project forward. With regards to the Mansfield, it was positioned that it was in a proposed existing sewer service area. It was not. Going before the zoning board, I've been attending every single zoning board meeting with regards to that. The positions that were put forward before this council were totally at odds with what is going on with the zoning board right now with regards to that project. Same thing with the HMUA board meetings. So I would just really caution you, also having sat on a land use board for 3 years, going back to Councilmember Cogger's position, be very careful with regards to giving conditional approvals. It's just the approval term that's listened to. The conditions fall by the wayside as time goes on. Thank you kindly.
Thank you. Sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Peter Craig. I'm chairman of the Holland Township Planning Board. And I would like to begin by saying that I deeply sympathize with your need to make a decision in this framework because you're being asked to do something that's impossible. You're being asked to give a recommendation to deny or approve without having a full knowledge and understanding of all the factors that are necessary for that approval. I know the staff did a wonderful job. I think the Natural Resources Committee did a wonderful job as well. There is no question whatever that the proposed application is completely inconsistent with the draft regional master plan.
Sorry, you said completely inconsistent?
Completely inconsistent. No doubt whatever about that. It's not even, somebody said it was a no-brainer, and of course it is. The important thing, though, is that this project has a more than a 10-year history. It was begun well before the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act was passed. And one can go on and on, I guess, with a series of examples, but let me suggest that there may be a large number of approvals that have already been given to this project, state approvals, DEP approvals, that may have real primacy in the decision as to whether or not it should be included in the water quality management plan. And if you either approve or deny, you're going to be approving or denying, perhaps, let's assume that you recommended a denial of the project, you would be recommending denial in spite of the fact that there were approvals that had primacy of which you had no knowledge. And it seems to me that that's a terribly uncomfortable position. And because this is a project that's been around for a long time, and because I'm sure that you don't understand, couldn't possibly understand all the ins and outs of this project and all the things that may bear upon the decision to deny or approve, I would suggest that in this case, you probably need some language that avoids either denial or approval. Anyhow, let me express once again my sympathy with you for having to make this decision. You're in a tough place.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other comments?
Mr. Chairman, just with counsel, yeah. This question did come up this morning in the testimony by the attorney representing the township. Dr. Van Abs read to us in the approval that are out there in terms of the freshwater wetlands permits, the conditions that the Department of Environmental Protection put on, saying this permit does not waive the obtaining of federal or other state or local government consent when necessary. This permit is not valid, and no work shall be undertaken until such time as all other required approvals and permits have been obtained. So just to understand the context of this, the idea that there are other permits which might trump our recommendation or might play into this, I don't think is a really relevant consideration. These are the documents the town has in hand. To the extent that they've gone forward at risk, it really is on them.
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. You have been debating about consistency and inconsistency, denial or approval, whether they are the same thing. I think, Mr. Weingart, given your history of working at the DEP, you know how convoluted and peculiar this language can get at DEP, which also uses the words consistency and inconsistency. I remember being told by somebody else in this room that a project was not inconsistent. You know, if you want people to take you seriously and to understand what you are saying, please use simple language. That's not to say that you can't provide all the reasons why something is inconsistent, why you should deny it, but please provide simple language. I think everybody in this room has done enough work with land use to know that using the word approval with conditions is an approval. When each member of this council, you're having a very difficult time with this, and I can understand why, because this is your first denial. When each member of this council agreed to serve, you also agreed to make decisions. You were charged to do so when you said that you would serve on this council. Please, pick up the mantle you accepted when you agreed to serve on the council to enact the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act, an act that 64% of the residents of the state are depending on you to do. Please vote for a denial of this. And then I have one last question, and I'm sorry if I am throwing a spanner in the works, and maybe I'm not, so you can tell me that I'm not. But you had, quite some time ago, a discussion about who can vote on things. If you are a county representative and something is in your county, can you vote on it? And I would like some clarification on what the answer to that was.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your comments were not unhelpful. We did get clarification that from the Ethics Commission regarding conflicts that county representatives could vote on municipal project reviews or plan conformance. But that representatives regarding their own municipality would have to recuse themselves regarding their own municipality.
Their own municipality, if they were a municipal official in that municipality.
Yes, and I think we still need to get additional clarification regarding residency, because residency may present similar problems.
Okay. Other comments?
Good morning. David Pringle, campaign director for the New Jersey Environmental Federation, and I wanted to very much thank the staff for this analysis and all these WPP amendments. The analysis is very solid and straightforward, and they're doing great work. That said, I am dismayed that we have spent an hour and a half on this conversation today. You not only have the legal right, the law is clear, you have the legal mandate to make a recommendation. You're on this council to make decisions, thumbs up, thumbs downs, maybes, with conditions, whatever. You need to do that, not just provide analysis. I would argue that's your primary charge, and especially around natural resources, around our drinking water. So please do so, make a recommendation, and in this case, not necessarily all the time, but let the chips fall down on each individual plan. In this case, you need to do an unconditional denial. It's so inconsistent, there's no other alternative. I've been sitting next to the developer by circumstance in this conversation. He seems like a very fine fellow. You'll be doing him a favor, because the clearer and sooner he gets an answer, the easier it will be for him to move forward. Thank you.
Other comments?
My name is Deborah Post. The entire discussion today shows that 3 years later, this council still has no idea what they are doing. Mr. Borden is citing the DEP regs as being the boss of this council. The DEP reg language is a misinterpretation and an overreach of the Highlands Act. This council needs to read their duties in the Highlands Act itself, not allow the DEP to be both judge and dictator. If the council can't take a position, why is tax money being wasted here today? The thought that this council should point out inconsistencies is weasel wording a denial. To approve contingent on inconsistency resolution is a complete duck of your obligations to the Highlanders. This council told us during plan development that there would be site-specific review and the application of smart growth common sense. We were told that the plan was a fluid process. You now describe a very, very rigid plan. So were you lying to us? Resolution of inconsistencies in the context of approvals, not denials. Without this council's active involvement and cooperation is a Sisyphusian task, and you all know it. And finally, the thought that what this council does is, quote, beyond the public, unquote, is the essence of elitist arrogance.
Other comments? Yes.
My name is Dave Pfeiffer. I'm a Highlands Project Director for ANJAC, and I'm pleased to be present here today to witness something that is perhaps a landmark in the evolution of the Council's procedures. I was present at the various committee meetings that discussed this particular application. I saw the GIS presentations. I've read your staff reports. I've reviewed your checklist. And I would certainly agree with the notion that you should recommend a denial on this application. This application is the wrong project in the wrong place vis-a-vis the RMP. The fact that you may want to rely on DEP exclusively to correct deficiencies or concerns that you may have is not rational. The DEP does not necessarily have the regulatory authority that you would seek to redress inadequacies in this plan. Importantly, I think you need to also remember that the DEP has made some progress on this particular application and has issued permits. The fact that that has taken place does not make it right with regard to the RMP. You've got to wield your lumber here. Please, look at this project in the way it's intended in the law. You have an absolute right to recommend a denial based on specific findings, which you have made. To address one concern that I find very disturbing, the notion that you're going to have bright line indicators, that you have a 20% area of steep slope, that you have a 10-foot incursion into the 300-foot buffer. If you want to raise that level, or raise the bar to that level, be aware that you don't necessarily have all the information you're ever going to need to make those decisions. You don't necessarily have a site plan with real detail on it. The applications you're reviewing will come to you in various stages of evolution. So try to avoid a bright line requirement like that, except where it can actually be determined. Importantly, also, and this I really can't emphasize too much, the council needs to begin to trust its staff. If you want the staff to perform well and continue to serve the needs of this council, you cannot always second guess, third guess, and fourth guess their work at the committee level and at the staff level. You have to rely on your staff. In this case, the facts of the case are so clear that recommending a denial is absolutely imperative. And finally, there was a mention that what we were doing here today was precedential. Each one of these applications is unique. they're more akin to a board of adjustment process at the municipal level than they are a planning board process. They're based on the findings of the case. This particular case's findings are very strong. Your staff knows it. Your staff has presented it. And I urge you to vote a strong denial and explain yourselves, if that's necessary, to the DEP. Why would I say that? Why would I say recommend a denial? In addition to the facts supporting the case, the most important thing is your greatest leverage exists in issuing a denial. If an applicant is faced with a denial, he's either going to abandon the project or he's going to radically redesign the project. That is your best leverage to change the outcome on the ground. And that is what you want. And you want that outcome to be in conformance with the RMP. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Michael Cady, and I had an organization that's a citizens group down in Holland Township called Friends of Holland Highlands. And as the name implies, we're very focused on protecting the environment in the Highlands portions of Holland Township. We've been in existence since the early part of this decade or millennium, and with big supporters of the Highlands Act and of everything this council is doing. So I just want to say that we're very heartened to read the work by the staff on behalf of the people concerned about the environment in Holland. We've been disturbed about this project for a good amount of time. One of the principal reasons being that it fell into that strange period at the DEP where they were reducing the 300-foot buffer for any disturbance. We know for a fact that the person who made the judgment had seen an aerial photograph showing the fields were mowed, and so therefore reduced the buffer to 150 feet. So you were asking what the impact is. They cut it to 150 feet, and one of the permits spoken of by the DEP even allows an intrusion into that at 150 feet. So and we've been very concerned and haven't seemed to have our concerns addressed. So when I saw the report, I was very heartened. And so I would urge the council to do what is their mandate. You're supposed to make a recommendation. And a recommendation means you recommend that you do something. You don't just say, here it is, it's inconsistent, you figure out what that means. Recommend that it be denied. This project is wildly out of whack with the RMP. So I would urge the council to please follow your mandate and actually recommend something to the DEP, and not simply say that it's not consistent, but recommend that it be denied. Thanks.
Thank you. Further comments?
Chairman, just want to make it clear for the applicant that, if you look for the record too, that the public comment, the applicant can submit comments if you like as well.
Good morning, members of the council. I appreciate the time and energy you've taken to actually give thought to what you're doing here today. That's encouraging for everyone, regardless of what side of the aisle you sit with regards to the particular project. My concern here... Sure. My name is Darren J. Liotti. I'm from the firm of Morrow, Savo, Camerino, and Grant. And I represent the developer with respect to this particular project. I think what's disturbing here is, as Mr. Peterson had indicated, is viewing this in an entire vacuum. Whether or not the substantive determination of the project as it exists in its site plan fits within the RMP is not the only factor to be considered in taking action. And while your action may in fact be a recommendation of a denial or an approval conditional upon X, Y, or Z, or whatever the standards may be, the issue here is that this is a project which has been in place, approved by the DEP prior to the inception of the Highlands Council. $1,400,000 in engineering, site work, etc., has been done on a project which was brought to my client by the municipality with the understanding that all of the parameters necessary for construction of this project were met. Site plans were approved. DEP issued the permits, which I'm sure you must have seen in coming to your consideration with regards to this project. Now what we're being told is, okay, this doesn't fit with the RMP, and we're going to recommend to the DEP that they deny this project, it shouldn't be built, or that it's so far out of whack that it just doesn't fit with the RMP. Well, again, I'm not going to disagree substantively with what the proposed RMP and the existing standards that you're proposing here are not necessarily in compliance with respect to same. But there has to be some recognition by this body that previous actions taken by the state of New Jersey have to have some degree of precedence and import. If the DEP has looked at freshwater encroachment, if it has looked at wildlife issues, if it has looked at all these other things, are we now to substitute your judgment for theirs? I'm sure that they gave reasonable and due consideration to these particular issues when they examined them. So by failure to recognize their examination, you minimize their work as much as you don't want your work minimized. And I think it is a very short-sighted approach to reviewing these matters. This is not your typical, we just decided we were going to build this project and come here and we want to get your opinion on it. We're way past that point. And while this may be inconsistent with the RMP, it is an approved inclusionary COA project upon which the township received its second round substantive certification. There is significant reliance upon this in both the planning for second and third rounds with Holland Township, as well as with regards to resources which were invested by my client with representations from the governmental entities that it dealt with, that this sewer service permit would be issued almost in a pro forma fashion. Representations by Mr. Dieterle, the attorney for the Township of Holland, indicated that meetings with DEP indicated that this project was to be grandfathered, that there were to be no substantive problems based upon the lack of a wastewater quality management plan. And as a result, as a stick, in the carrot-to-stick analogy, I'm not going to use my Greek mythology regarding Sisyphus, but I'm going to try to use something a little bit more colloquial. As a stick to get the township to submit its water quality management plan, it says we're not going to let them have their sewer permit until this is taken care of, because for a period of maybe 10 years they've been looking for that for the purposes of licensing the Milford facility. This is a project. We're dealing with the sewer issue. This is the broad review of this project, while within the mandate of what you see for yourselves, is certainly overreaching with respect to this particular project in the status that it is in. With respect to this project, what we've got is one permit to be issued. The permit to be issued is to connect to an existing sewer line, which is not far from the project, which has capacity to a registered facility. That is the only thing that the DEP, and it would have been issued, but for the existence of a filed wastewater or water quality management plan prior to the existence of the Highlands Council. So while you may, in your assessment, come to the conclusion that this is not in keeping with the RMP, it should be recognized that others preceding you have looked at these issues. And the fact that some of the folks in this room, motivated by the best intentions, I'm sure, don't like what the answer was, should not be a substantive reason to ignore what had come before. I have nothing further to say.
Thank you. That concludes the public comment on this application. Anything council members want to say before we vote on the resolution?
Yes, the last gentleman's remarks notwithstanding, and all the approvals that he cited are not before us this morning, this afternoon. We are dealing with one issue. And for the record, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to review a couple of paragraphs in the resolution. What we're talking about here, are several whereases. The title of the resolution is New Jersey Highlands Water Protection and Planning Council Recommendation on Proposed Water Quality Management Plan Amendment for Huntington Knolls. We're not talking about the entire project. We're not talking about anything else. We're talking about the WQMP. And in the resolution, there are specifics regarding the reasons why this should be denied. This may sound inconsistent with my previous comments, but I think that's what we're wise to focus on this morning, this afternoon. Thank you.
Any other comments, council members, before we go? And this is a roll call. So the motion is by Tim to
recommend to the EP that they deny this application for the plan amendment. Kurt Allstadt?
No.
Liz Calabrese?
Yes.
Tracy Carluccio?
Yes.
Bill Cocker?
Yes.
Tim Dillingham?
Yes.
Janice Kovach?
Yes.
Mimi Letts?
I'd just like to make one comment, if I may. I think that what this application and this discussion represents is that we're kind of moving into a new phase. We've spent our first years developing the plan, and now we're moving into implementation. And I think this is going to require a lot of thought on our part going forward as to how we're going to handle these things and how we're going to disseminate the information so that we all feel comfortable. But I've heard enough around the table as to the degree of nonconformance that there is or inconsistency with this, that it seems that it's appropriate that we deny this application.
So you're
vote
going.
Yes.
Debbie Pascarelli? Debbie? Debbie's gone. Mr. Peterson?
Not to belabor the point, but before I vote, which I think everybody knows how I'm going to vote, I have a problem with... I'm just going to say this. I'm voting no because this is in the planning area that hasn't opted in, and there's fear that we were going to circumvent, backdoor the Highlands Act onto those in the planning area. And I think that that's what we would be showing that we're doing, so I'm voting no. And just because it's a denial, I think the recommendations are fine. I don't have a problem with the staff put together that way.
John, can you hear me now?
Yes.
I'm voting yes to deny.
Mr. Schreier.
While I agree with Mr. Peterson's comments, I'm voting yes.
Taisha Way.
Yes.
And Scott Whitman.
I'll vote yes.
And I will too. So I will vote yes. So it passes. There are two votes against and 11 votes in favor, I guess. It passes 11-2.
I think that we should spend some time talking about how we're going to go about these processes in the future so that we can maybe be a little bit more expeditious.
Well, this was the easy one of the two we had to discuss today. It happens. So let's go back to Tim and then discuss the other.
Mr. Chairman, can we take a break?
Okay. Yeah, we'll take a 5-minute break.
This gentleman is relieved.
I guess I blew my 12:30.
I think I made very close.
The mic on?
I didn't touch it. Is that one on?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Some of them have like a red. I didn't want you to put, you know, then you don't have it on and it doesn't pick up.
I've done that before.
That's why I said that.
I thought it was a sugar.
No.
What's going
on?
No more words.
Yes. Very good, Jim. I like it.
We have Leo.
We lost a couple of council members. I'd like to get back before we start. So,
Janice is on the phone.
Okay. Scott's on the phone.
No.
I'll go around the motion.
Okay.
I
informed all three. Well, the third one is being.
Okay.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we now move on to item 10 on the agenda. The last one apparently was the no-brainer, so I'm not sure what this one is. But so again, I'll go back to the Natural Resource Committee. Tim?
Mr. Chairman, this application is, again, a proposed amendment to the Upper Raritan Water Quality Management Plan. Project is in the town of Nine Hill in Morris County. It's the name of the Canfield Builders or Christian Nine Hill. This one's coming to the council without a recommendation from the committee. So I think maybe just in response to some of the comments that were in the discussion earlier, if we could have Jim Hutzelman and any other staff that Eileen thinks is appropriate, perhaps take us through the analysis and the description of the inconsistencies. Because again, this is a fairly large project, which has got some fairly significant inconsistencies in the past. But it might be good to help inform the conversation up front before you talk about the recommendations.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm okay. Good afternoon. Before you should have
a moment. Is Derek to join us from the back of the room? I think you could ask Eric to come back and join us. Okay. Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Before you have a recommendation letter from the staff and a checklist documenting our findings for the Canfield WQMP, what I'm going to do just briefly is give you the summary. If there's any details on the checklist you want clarification on, I'll be happy to answer them. But I'm really going to walk you through the summary findings and the recommendation that staff arrived at. Just to give you a brief background, the project came to us in an initial review and we presented recommendations to the September Natural Resource Committee meeting. We reviewed a project that had a larger footprint than the one we reviewed now, but based on additional information that the applicant submitted to us, there's the project is 228 acres, and we've since found that there's going to be a settlement agreement that dedicates 178 acres of the parcel to open space in the township. So that reduced the initial scope of the project down to 275 acres, and that's the project that we've reviewed, and you have the findings before you. The project is going to include 275 age-restricted units, proposing to discharge 59,000 plus gallons of wastewater to a discharge to groundwater system. With the proposed development footprint, which all is going to be 46 acres of the 228 acres. That footprint is a conceptual site plan at this moment. The applicant has not done final site plan. Based on that conceptual footprint in our initial findings, the applicant did see where we initially identified some conflicts. The conflicts we identified, the applicant has indicated that some of those can be resolved by a modification of their conceptual site plan. Some of those issues include Highlands open water buffers, riparian areas, wellhead protection, vernal pools. In addition to that, we did find some other resources on the site that did present more of a conflict in that we didn't see in any easy way that the applicant could redesign the site and avoid those resources. So I'll go to the final recommendations to highlight those. One is critical habitat. The majority of the site, almost the entire 46-acre parcel is identified as wood turtle habitat. That is a state threatened species. Our policies regarding that site, or that resource, in the protection zone, which is where the site is located, are to avoid any modifications to that critical habitat. So the policy implications are fairly clear in that the applicant should avoid that resource. Again, given the extensive nature of the critical habitat on the site, we didn't simply recommend that the applicant redesign. In addition to that, prime recharge areas covered the majority of the site as well. Again, in the protection zone, the policy implications are pretty clear that the applicant can't add any impervious areas or modify that prime recharge area unless there's a demonstration of public health and safety or, in the instance, to make minimal practical use of the site. We didn't find any of those conditions to be applicable, so based in large part on those two conflicts, the recommendation was to deny the application. I'll just highlight a couple of the other ones. The extension of sewer and water to the site would require an 80% cluster. This is number four on the recommendations. Given the amount of dedicated space on the site to the township, we felt that this would be satisfied if the applicant could demonstrate to us exactly how many acres, what the nature of the dedication or the easement would be on the site. So this was more of a clarification, but if this did move forward, we would want that issue to be resolved. And finally, let me bring up the net water availability deficit. This is a little bit complicated in that the applicant is proposing to have public water extended to the site whose source water originates in the Almaton well fields, which is in a different subwatershed. Because that subwatershed is in deficit, there's policies that prohibit additional uses from a deficit watershed without some provision of mitigation. In fact, it's 125% mitigation of the consumptive use. The importance of that is for this site, is that if we find that that is a different subwatershed, which topographically it is, that becomes a depletive use, it has a higher recharge requirement, and the requirement is that the applicant institute the mitigation measures in the source watershed, which is actually a different subwatershed than where the site is located. That presents some problems for feasibility of that applicant unless he can find a site suitable off of the site to implement those mitigations. However, there's good evidence that the applicant submitted, and based in large part on current USGS models of the aquifer, that the site is hydrologically connected to the aquifer formations in the Almaton well field, which would give a rational basis, in our opinion, that that these two subwatersheds could be construed as a larger watershed, in which case it becomes a consumptive use. It reduces the mitigation requirement, and it allows the applicant to put the mitigation on site. So, and I'll just add that we did have a discussion with the applicants and their consultants here at the Highlands in early this month. And the applicant did provide some additional site-specific data that we did use in our analysis. For example, we used steep slopes data that the applicant had provided because they did a much more detailed survey. So that did reduce some of the amount of steep slopes area because our steep slope coverage comes from a much higher scale or much higher elevation. And they did provide us electronic coverage of wetlands because they had an LOI, a letter of interpretation from DEP. That is actually the jurisdictional wetlands that we would accept rather than our regional analysis. So we did take some of that data into consideration, and that did help gear our findings. So I think that pretty much summarizes our findings. If you have any questions, feel free.
And the committee has got a discussion this morning. We
I did want, Jim, just to touch on the critical habitat, because there was a report given to us, and I think that it's important to acknowledge that.
That's a good point. With regards to the critical habitat, our data, which comes from Landscape Version 3, which was provided to us by DEP, identifies this as wood turtle habitat. The applicant provided a 2004 threatened and endangered species survey that was commissioned by the Township Planning Board. Now, the findings in that report were that while it might be potential habitat for the wood turtle and other species, that it actually isn't, that they didn't document any sightings of wood turtle. So the applicant used this to refute our initial conclusions, but based on our interpretation, it didn't seem sufficient enough for us to supersede our coverage. So the recommendation was that we use our coverage as the critical habitat. If the applicant wants to forward that information to DEP and DEP finds that acceptable, then I think the recommendation would be that that particular resource recommendation might change. But with regards to the overall recommendation, that policy statement, the critical habitat, and the primary charge really present a conflict with the ability of the applicant to redesign the site and avoid inconsistencies with the RMP.
The last paragraph we discussed, the staff memo to the committee, the staff memo was on both projects essentially the same in their overall recommendation, or is this the recommendation in this case is less negative?
I wouldn't qualify it as less negative. I would say the conditions, not even conditions, the inconsistencies that we provided a specific, that we highlighted were, I think, maybe explicitly drawn out a little bit more. Because sometimes I had gotten some questions from DEP as to exactly the nature of the inconsistency. So I want them to be clear in the letter. So I identified them a little bit more explicitly. But especially with regards to items 1 and 2, I wouldn't say by any means that it's a less negative. I think the language is clear that it's inconsistent.
Mr. Chairman, I think the answer to your question could be answered as there are fewer of these inconsistencies than there were in the prior application. Right, Jim?
In terms of the number
of the prior application on this project.
I'm sorry, on the prior one we discussed.
I think, Jim, what you have to focus on here is that the applicant showed a willingness and an ability to avoid steep slopes, open water protection areas, riparian areas. So it is, and vernal pools.
That's
so
true.
It limited the consistent inconsistencies. And what Jim was saying then was the critical habitat. We didn't have the ability to, looking at the Zappalardi report, to say that that we would use that as overriding what we saw in Landscape 3, but we would offer that opportunity to DEP to do so.
That's
because
right.
They have the expertise to do the site investigation, field investigation, to see that. So that remains something that still is on the table, so to speak. And again, if the two sub-watersheds are hydrologically connected, there was an opportunity there to do 125% mitigation possibly on site. So the clustering provision was a clarification that we seek. So we're left with the prime groundwater recharge areas if those other issues are addressed satisfactorily.
So I think it illustrates that Jim went out of his way to illustrate that the door is not completely shut on some of these issues. Now I think it's incumbent upon the board to try and carry that same spirit forward, just like he saw the need to expand on what he had in front of him. I would like to see this board do the same thing moving forward with the DEP.
And what would that mean doing?
Try and find a way to show the board that this was a little different than our last application. And we're not going to take as harsh a stand, whether it be an approval or a denial, to try and translate to them that, whether it be for lack of information or that there could be some redesign, that this one we're a little bit more interested in the outcome and want to be a little more involved, the way I see my role here.
I guess from the opposite perspective on this, the way I understand the information is that the applicant has not demonstrated compliance yet, and that there are inconsistencies, as Jim said. While there are some of them that can be addressed perhaps by site redesign, there are major significant issues of non-compliance that the staff has not been shown how they could be addressed. So while there are some perhaps unanswered questions, there still are these major flaws in them. I think we need to be very careful about putting too much weight on applicants which are collaborative and engage us in a perhaps a more constructive dialogue when we come to that final moment of having to measure compliance with the plan. Again, you know, as Jim said, the intrusions into the sensitive areas can probably be adjusted for. The applicant has at least indicated some willingness to consider that, but the other questions are still outstanding. And I think it's important to note about the critical habitat question that the committee did talk about, that the survey was done apparently without going directly onto the property. It was not done by this applicant or at this applicant's request. It was part of an earlier, part of this very long travail on this project. So to the extent that it's substantive enough or meets scientific standards that would be appropriate to refute the classification of the property as critical habitat, I think it's probably a little more direct way of saying what the staff has said about their doubts about the quality of that report.
So within the committee, there were two points of view, which I guess each of you represent. So maybe you could put it, one of you could put it in the language of a resolution that we could then discuss.
My recommendation would be that we recommend denial. For the reasons that the inconsistencies are significant, related to core policies of the RMP, and that with that denial, then the applicant again has the opportunity to redesign the program or make further demonstrations that would address the inconsistencies. If those are resolved, then I think the council could reconsider. But we have a decision that's been brought to us in front of us to act upon now. And once we, I think, give our guidance as to where we stand on this application, it's the applicant's burden to respond to that.
I'll second that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'd like to go back to a point I made earlier today, and this is the extent of inconsistency with the regional master planning. I suggested that we have to somehow quantify the extent of inconsistency using numbers. And I think that this stands out again as an example of why we need to do that. If both of these applications are denied, I think it sends the wrong message to the people down at DEP, the staffers who receive this stuff. Because the truth is that, you know, one of the whereas, I think number 7, says that the DEP has proposed adoption of the amendment. It's already proposed. It's already moving forward. It seems to me we have one opportunity to make comment, to influence how they're going to handle this application. And so if I'm a staffer at DEP, there's never going to be another board of human beings. It's just going to be some drone down there doing their work. The drone is the worker who never leaves the building. That's what those people do down there. But they need information to help formulate the final decision. And I think that we have an obligation to provide that information in some sort of quantitative manner. And I think that, a proposal that is 10 feet in, that's 10 feet over the riparian buffer limit is much different than a proposal that's 290 feet over the riparian buffer limit. And I'm not saying that either of them is in compliance with the regional master plan, but I think it merits an entirely different level of review when it comes to the final adoption of the wastewater plan.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address that when you're done.
Go ahead.
That specific issue. I think Tim made a very good point this morning that we have very specific standards that we've debated in order to lay them out in the RMP. And at this point, we're deciding whether or not this application is consistent with that plan. It's sort of a little bit pregnant thing. You can't, either you're consistent or you're not in terms of intruding into, for instance, a vernal pool buffer or an open water or riparian area buffer. And you either are or you're not. And that's what we're measuring it against. And whereby I do understand your interest in the details on this, And I suggest that as a member of the committee, or perhaps if we change our process, the entire council, you know, it's appropriate to look at that and discuss it. And that is weighed by the staff when they review these, because as in this case, they said to the applicant, gee, you know, can you avoid these steep slopes? Can you remove your project from the open waters buffer area? And in those areas where physically they could see it could be done, and the applicant said, yes, we think we can do that, then they're saying, well, these areas may not be inconsistent if they make changes. But these other areas, such as the prime groundwater recharge area, covers the entire site. So physically, there's really no way, unless you don't build the project, not to intrude onto that prime groundwater recharge area. So I understand what you're saying about the shades of how difficult how difficult a project is in terms of meeting the bar that we've set. But in fact, we have standards, and we're supposed to be measuring them against those standards. The details should be examined at the committee level or the council level, but in terms of our determination and deciding whether or not to recommend a denial or approval, I think we need to look at the lines that are laid out in the standards in the RMP. We can't start second-guessing all those standards that we spent so many, you know, now at this point, years developing.
And I don't suggest that we do, but I think there's two levels of function here. I think we have to keep in mind that this is the planning area, and that the municipality retains the right to make decisions in the planning area and retains the right to either opt into the plan or not. And so our only purview of authority is making recommendations based on consistency with the regional master plan for the wastewater amendments. So it seems to me that if the municipality wants the umbrella of protection that we're offering in the regional master plan, then this whole thing is going to come back to us where we can address the compliance with the master plan. But we're not asked in making recommendations to enforce compliance. It's incumbent upon the municipality to say, we want this, we're going to opt in, help us, we want this applicant to make sure it does not build where there's the turtle and does not impact the HUP 14, whatever the issues are. But here, this is a tiny little job we have right now, which is just to say, okay, they got before the DEP, DEP has to ask our opinion, and we just say, in terms of consistency, and we just say, well, it's inconsistent, and here's the level of inconsistency. You guys use this to the best of your ability to formulate your decision.
Let me ask a question of Scott and Eric, because my understanding is on the committee, the two of you saw this project. I lost a little bit this morning, but the four members of the committee were essentially in agreement on the first project in terms of its lack of consistency with the plan or the extent to which it was inconsistent with the plan. And two of you saw this one as somewhat different, and I sort of wanted to get at more of that difference, what you saw as the difference.
Again, like I stated before, it's true, it's not quite the litmus test. If I don't approach it as go down the column, and if you find one value that does not meet our criteria, it's a no. I like to think that we're human, that we're reasonable, and that we're looking at our RMP, and we're looking across the table at an applicant, whether it be the town bringing it forward, whether it be the developer. But they're showing us that they used our RMP in the design, in the clustering, in realizing, and we helped them realize what environmental constraints exist. And as they were going forward in their development process, they were using the RMP to shape the project. They got 95% of the way there. What's left? That's where we step in. What's left in that 5% that creates a problem? If there is a 5%, you know, I don't want to just always take the hard line that it's a no. I'd like to think that there's some kind of reasoning skill here. Maybe even illustrate 5% is too much. Maybe it should be just, we may be closer than that. But that's where I'm on the
hard. So to take Kurt's question, you're not, we're not really quantifying it. You're saying they're closer than the other one.
Oh, absolutely are. And like I said, they've done a lot already using our processes, whether it be identifying the constraints or whether it be, you know, like I said, clustering. You know, they used a lot of the tools, and they're moving on their side of the table also.
Eric, if you want to add anything to that.
I wasn't, I ran late because I
kind of assume like yourself, I'm not feeling very well, so I had a hard time getting up this morning to get here. So I missed the first application. I came at the comment period, so I didn't vote on it, what we did there. But on the second one, I've read all the information, so I knew what the discussions were, what the issues were. I just want to make that clear. I read everything before today. I agree with Scott. I've discussed my issues at length before. I agree with Scott on this one. I'm not sure whether they can overcome all the issues that are raised. But my problem is, I really have a problem with this in the planning area. That's really my biggest problem. If they had opted in, I would be in total agreement with Tracy and Tim on how to proceed with some of this. But it's the fact that it's in the planning area and nobody's opted in yet that I have a real problem. And that's why I did it so we could raise and talk about the issue and come to a procedural way that we're going to handle it at this point in time. And I want it to be vetted in full in public so that everyone knew where we were coming from when we do make these decisions. And I know there's going to be disagreement about how we come to it, but I think that's healthy. We're not going to agree on everything. But we've made a determination that we're going to either approve or deny. And so based on the criteria, and we're all going to have to vote based on that, whether we're going to approve or deny things, whether they just have one problem that can be overcome or not, or whether it's a small problem, they're at 79%, and they need 80% conservation, 20% for the building. I mean, those are the things that we're going to have to decide. But I think we have to be consistent in whatever we do.
Mr. Chairman, can I just ask a question? I might have missed it. Is there a staff recommendation?
The staff recommendation is in the memo that you have before you. What we, the language actually didn't use the words approved borderline.
I guess that's why I missed it.
Right.
It's actually, unfortunately, the formatting is buried in the second one where he says, under fine groundwater recharge areas, the House Council staff recommends the findings which would only be considered inconsistent with one draft finding.
Right. In that one.
Only because that was one resource where we just couldn't find the means to resolve the issue, either with any additional information or with a redesign from the applicant.
Let me be clear. The staff is clear that it's not consistent. I don't want to waver on that. We are clear.
No one's questioning the findings.
Absolutely. Right. Right. Okay, let me get these comments, and then I want to turn to public comment, because I think it might be informative for us all to hear that now, and then we can have more council discussion.
I think Tim.
Yeah, I'll love it. Accepting council comments now.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it was Mr. Pfeiffer who said that we have to rely upon the staff, otherwise we're going to be weakening the underpinnings of this council. And I thought that was a very good point to make. Nonetheless, we are the decision makers. And as I said earlier, in the same similar context, we listen to those recommendations, we rely upon them, we make the determination. Were that not the case, when we find inconsistency, as I said before, let's just go home. It doesn't meet the consistency requirement. There's no need to discuss it further. It must be denied. We are having a discussion, and I think it's important to have that discussion. We are here as a deliberative, interpretive body. You said put a human face on it. I think that's exactly what it is. Evaluate everything to the extent possible. So I see this as you were indicating or suggesting in your first comment on this, that this is less onerous, I guess, in a way, to deny the entire application on the basis of this inconsistency or these four inconsistencies in the water quality management plan, taking that separate from the entire proposal that is being considered for development, I think would be a mistake on the part of the council. So I'm inclined not to vote to deny this at this time.
Mr. Chairman, I had a question.
Yes.
Well, one point and then one question. The point is, going to Liz's question,
number two, where the staff recommendation is very clear. And number one, in discussion this morning at the committee, I think...
Yeah, what do you mean by number one?
Number one, critical habitats in the recommendation section on page four of the January 12th. It says Highlands Council staff cannot accept this conclusion without concurrence from DEP, and DEP should evaluate this. But in discussions this morning, I think it was made clear that staff agreed that the landscape version 3 conclusion that critical habitat is located on this site has not been undone by the evidence that was presented with these
Zabalorians.
Is that true? I just wanted to get that clear.
The feeling was that the information in the Zappalardi report did not meet a sufficient standard for us to then use that versus our Landscape 3 data.
Okay, so it is still inconsistent with that standard in the RMP and critical habitat.
Yeah, and I think that's fair to say, sure.
Okay, and then my question is, a little bit of a concern I have related to discussion here about how the applicant has said, well, yes, we could avoid steep slopes and vernal habitat and all these other things. But I'm wondering, you know, how that is actually carried out. I mean, if we, I think it's important for us to say yes to DEP. It seems as if the applicant is saying they can make these changes, but what guarantees do we have that they're actually going to make those changes? And if we don't perhaps identify those as inconsistencies as well, and not just accept that they're not going to be inconsistencies, then we're sort of bypassing our opportunity to weigh in on those very important issues, open waters, buffers. So maybe it's for Tom Borden, like what kind of guarantees do we have?
It would be like we did with a prior application where the applicant agreed to deep-restrict it, and we delineated the deep restriction for conservation easement.
So we would say very specifically the conditions that we would attach, that they would need to avoid this, and lay them all out.
Correct.
Okay, let's turn to public comment on this, and then, as I said, we can move to council discussion. Are there people who would like to speak specifically on this application?
The applicant's here.
The applicant's here. Why don't we start with the applicant and then go from there?
If I might, Mr. Chairman, I might prefer to wait because there might be new issues other than they're in the staff report raised during the public comment, which would be incumbent upon me. So if your preference is that I not come up twice, it might be advisable to take into consideration those so I can address any public comments as well as the staff comments.
Okay. Next. Yes.
I'm Marion Harris. I usually talk for the Morris County Trust for Historic Preservation, which is not part of the county operation. But today I am speaking as the president of the Mount Hope Historical Conservancy. There is an absolutely hair-raising omission in your data, and that is the fact that this project is on the site of the Dickerson Mine, which is one of the two oldest mine sites in northwestern New Jersey, and of course mining historic and cultural resources have a very high priority in our list of these resources because the mining industry was the earliest economic engine of northwestern New Jersey. Some of this is going to be in our overall comments about the plan about the hierarchy of cultural resources, but in this case the reason that you don't have it in your database is that it's not listed on the register. And this is a very serious problem. It doesn't mean that your procedure is wrong, but it means that there's a glaring gap here because we've talked before about the very small proportion of historic resources that are, in fact, listed on the register. I would be surprised, though, if there were nothing at all in SHPO's database about this because I think that maybe some parts of this site have been mentioned before. But the important thing about the fact that this is the Dickerson Mine site is that the site is much larger than the site that is now proposed for this project. The site is a gestalt. I've run out of ways of talking about context in English. But it's a thing that goes on both sides of the road. Mail and Dickerson's house, the site of it, is across the road. And in addition to the fact that there was mining done here, so that, yes, there are mine shafts, it's an abandoned mine site, and there's another source of data that you might want to put into your database. There were all sorts of auxiliary buildings, some of which were part of the actual mining operation, and others were things like miners' housing. All of this is invisible to the untrained eye. It is archaeology. This is a resource type called industrial archaeology, which can be either above or below ground or a little bit of both. So what needs to be done on this site is a good deal of archaeology so that the whole site can be mapped and interpreted. We're not saying that all this stuff should be rebuilt, but the entire site as a whole is an important contribution to the community. I should also tell you that I sat through more than 2 years of hearings of one of the iterations, an earlier iteration of this project at the township, where the township's own mining engineer consultant told us in what I thought was fascinating detail about the danger of assuming that because you have seen the top of a mine shaft, you've found the opening, then you know where the mine shaft goes, because they don't just drop straight down like the rabbit hole, but the guys down below are following the money, and when the vein gets richer, they start going in a different direction. The veins in general are mined in a slanting direction, but it isn't necessarily the direction that you would assume overall for the geology of the region, which is southwest to northeast, but sometimes they deviate from that. So if you have managed to avoid building on top of the openings of the mine shaft, you cannot be sure that you are avoiding the entire effect of the mine shaft, as everybody knows who lives in Mine Hill, because they have sudden subsidences there quite regularly. So I don't know how you can consider this resource that's not in your database, but it most definitely does exist. There's one other thing I would like to say about community character, because that is one of the things that the plan spends a good deal of time on. The character of Mine Hill is defined by one or two-story buildings on small lots. As soon as you introduce something like a modern townhouse development of any size into a community like that, you are having a very substantial impact on the character of that community. This is a design impact, but it's something that, according to your plan, you want to consider. So I hope you will. I don't know what the solution is to this. I hope that they are planning now not to build on anything that is archaeologically significant, but I certainly think that they ought to do that archaeology and let us know what they have found and keep out of its way, because the Dickerson mine site matters to us.
Thank you. Is there anyone here from the township who would like to speak on this project?
Yes, I'm the town attorney, Steve Severid. As Mr. Geiger stated, I think it'd be best if there are other remarks that might come that I can speak later. Thank you.
All right. Is there anyone who would like to speak now?
My name is Deborah Post. I'd just like to say that the staff to this council is partisan and extremely biased. They all hold an agenda, some an extreme agenda, of environmentalism without an ounce of balance or concern for the human aspect of this process. This council must not rely on or rubber stamp the staff. You have been appointed to do a job. Please do it.
Other comments?
Thank you, Chairman. I'm Cindy Aronclue, Executive Director of the Upper Raritan Watershed Association. I thank the Council for extending the public comment time on the proposed amendment. First, I want to compliment the staff on the extensive analysis and report posted on January 12th. Given the environmental constraints and threats to water quality and quantity, my association is very concerned about any proposed development on the site. I'll ask Peggy Snyder to address many of our concerns, but at this time I'd like to focus and ask for clarification on just one of the many issues related to the application referencing the clustering provision, and excuse me if I missed something, I might be naive on this. I'm questioning how the developer is going to meet the clustering provision of 80%. According to the staff's analysis, a minimum of 182.4 acres would be required to be dedicated to open space. Sometime last summer, several press releases indicated that the town purchased 190 acres from Canfield Builders to be dedicated to open space. So I don't understand how the 182.4 acres is the developer's open space to dedicate. It seems that the development site is 46.7 acres. The age-restricted project calls for approximately 30% impervious cover and disturbance on the majority of the site. Mine Hill Preservation Partners and Canfield Builders have all celebrated the preservation project, but clearly there's still unknowns in the checklist. Other references to a settlement agreement. Without knowing the specifics, I feel that this preservation success is being paraded to advocate for a project on a property that has no business being developed. The environmental issues are overwhelming. But to get back to my point, the council and the public need more clarification on the specifics of ownership, which would ultimately answer how the developer is going to meet the clustering provision. There seem to be a lot of unknowns on this project. The critical habitat for wood turtle is not conclusive. A data report implies that an expert tiptoed around the edges of the site. There will be a water deficit. How will mitigation requirements be met? Where is an updated site plan? And too many unknowns in what we know is not acceptable. Confirmed by the applicant asking to follow public comments, I feel as though the council staff has exercised its limited time and resources to accommodate an applicant's fact-finding process. I urge the council to deny this application. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Wilma Fry. I'm representing New Jersey Conservation.
Could you just spell your last name? I'm very sorry.
Wilma Fry, F-R-E-Y. Wilma.
Just a title.
Please don't interrupt us.
Okay.
We'll give you any information afterwards.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
I'm representing New Jersey Conservation Foundation. This project is one of the projects, I believe, that helped lead to the passage of the Highlands Act. And that's why consistency with the RMP is mandated in this case, in all cases. But this project was an egregious project, and it remains an egregious project. I do not see that this project is any less damaging or less consistent than the previous one. It is just as bad as the previous one in terms of consistency. And so we really urge that there be a clear recommendation of denial for this project. When you look at the size of this project, it's got 275 units on 46.7 acres. That's 5.85 or almost 6 units per acre. If this would be developed in the usual 2- or 3-story type development, every square foot of that site would probably be disturbed. It is very unlikely that they could avoid all the aspects, the stream corridors, the critical habitat's impossible to avoid, but the vernal pool habitat, the stream corridor buffers, the things where the developer had indicated a willingness to avoid these. It seems to me that it would be impossible to do that given the size of the number of units that are proposed for the project. Perhaps you could put in 6 20-story buildings and accomplish that avoidance, but not with the usual type of 2- to 3-story structures. I also have a question about the open space. The open space that is being considered as sort of a cluster, that this is being considered as a cluster to the open space. Well, the open space does not belong to the applicant. The applicant already got money for and was paid for a parcel of land. It is no longer part of this owner's holdings. And so it can't be considered the open space for a cluster. So I think there's a whole rethinking that needs to go on about that aspect of this development. And I know that clustering is considered to be, a good way to develop in this case, but it doesn't make sense in this way. Legally, it doesn't make sense. So we really urge, I think that there's an excellent analysis of all the problems in the document, and I think that this project, no less than the previous one, deserves to have a clear recommendation of denial to the DEP. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Other comments?
Hi, my name is Peggy Snyder. I'm the engineer for the Upper Raritan Watershed Association. And this is the second time I've been here. I was here for the first Natural Resources Committee meeting on this application. Just by way of background, I'm a licensed engineer. I'm licensed in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. The Upper Raritan Watershed Association asked me to take a look at this development as far as the environmental impacts that are involved, and as well as some of the engineering details that might sort of jump out at me. So I guess I want to start by saying, after hearing everything today and everything I've reviewed, I feel like I'm here to support the technical comments from your technical staff and kind of give a little bit of an engineering slant to it that you might not have heard. And I think I agree with a lot of what they said, but there may be one or two areas where I somewhat disagree.
They being staff?
The staff report. That's pretty much what I'm referring to. The first one with which I agree wholeheartedly is that this entire site is a site for prime groundwater recharge. I think that's unequivocal based on everything I reviewed of the DEP file. From an engineering standpoint, given the type of soils that are there, given the type of the fact that this is a prime groundwater recharge area, this applicant in its concept plan is not providing any indication that they will be infiltrating any runoff. And that's a concern as far as meeting the regulations for the recharge requirement and also the Highlands consistency determination there as well. It should be noted that these are very permeable soils and geology to the extent that they may actually be too permeable for infiltration basins. If stormwater is infiltrated too quickly, it doesn't always get the water quality treatment that it deserves and that is required by the regulations. In general, on a site like this, one or two soil borings, even though it's a concept plan, when you have this many environmental constraints, having some good, solid soil boring data would really help you determine if the site is buildable. So the recharge was the first one. Then there are two areas that I really kind of disagree somewhat and disagree more than somewhat. I'll go right to the one that I really sort of take issue with the technical report. Under the forest section of the critical resource analysis, the recommendation for it, the implication seems to be that very low impact development techniques are being used on this site. I would not characterize this development at stormwater management as very low impact development. These techniques involve limiting impervious cover, providing naturalized stormwater management, non-structural stormwater management, rather than having all the stormwater piped to a big, large detention basin at the end of the line. What low impact development means is that you work with the lay of the land, you protect the existing and maintain the existing hydrology in the post-developed condition. I don't see that being done on this site at all. In fact, the largest stormwater basin is located on nearly the highest point of the site, and generally, given that water runs downhill, I'm really struggling with the fact that this concept plan even indicates that this can be built as shown. This is also an issue for the steep slopes. The applicant has said this is another area where the technical committee has said, yes, you are building on steep slopes, but we think we can work together and fix that and you can avoid these areas. Both that issue and the issue of the very low impact development, I don't believe that can really be addressed unless this project is scaled back substantially. When I spoke at the Natural Resources Committee meeting in September, I raised issues that this site is so intense that it might not even be built to meet residential site improvement standards. We have houses that are sitting right on the roadway right-of-way. I calculated for this meeting, assuming the entire site has two-bedroom residential units and no three-room residential units, they would need 596 parking spaces, and this site is providing 340. So they have roughly half of the parking that they're going to need. There are just so many inconsistencies. It really looked to me like this site can't sustain this development, even at a concept plan level. And that was one of the concerns I raised before, and I raise it again, is that I'm not sure that these two issues, the very low impact development technique and the avoidance of steep slopes, I'm not sure that that can be done. I think, I'm not saying it can't be done, but I don't believe, from an engineering standpoint, enough has been enough information has been provided to make that determination. And then I guess my final point, I had raised in a letter to the DEP, I had written two letters, actually, after reading the Alamatong Wellfield study and doing the fire review. I kind of danced around the issue that there might be a connection between the watersheds, between this site and the well field. But since I'm not a hydrogeologist, I didn't make any statement to that effect. I just raised it as an issue. But I wasn't raising it as an issue because of the consumptive depletive. I mean, that was part of it. I was more concerned with the impact of this wastewater that's going to be discharged into the ground. If there is a connection between this site and the aquifer, what level of treatment is that sanitary discharge going to need? And that was my concern for that. And then I would like to also echo what another person has already said. And I said this, I believe, in both of my reports to the DEP, which was, what is the impact on the aquifer, on the wastewater treatment, on the water quality, with the fact that there's a history of well of mining having occurred on the site. And I believe that's not a hydrogeologist, but I think it might be very wise to have some kind of information to document the impact of the mine and how the past mining, how that's going to affect the water quality and quantity. And that's all I have. And I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. Other comments? Yes, sir.
Thank you. My name is Mark Zakutansky. I'm representing the New Jersey Highlands Coalition. The council is charged with submitting a recommendation based on an analysis of consistency with the RMP. The staff and public has demonstrated significant inconsistencies with this proposed development and the RMP. The final draft RMP sets forth goals, policies, and objectives, setting specific guidelines for project review, which are currently and accurately reflected in the WQMP amendment project checklist, which you have before you. This checklist is a determination of consistency. Excuse me. If the proposed project is identified as being inconsistent with the RMP as reflected in this checklist, it is the council's obligation to submit a recommendation to the DEP based on the sound science compiled and utilized by this council and their staff. In the case before us now, the WQMP amendment project review checklist clearly indicates this project is inconsistent with the goals, policies, and objectives set forth in the RMP. Under this consideration, it should be the recommendation of this council to deny this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dave Pfeiffer, Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions, and former director of the Upper Raritan Watershed Association. In my capacity during 1998 and 1999, we were involved with the Alamatong Wellhead Protection Study. This particular study delineated the contributing zones that supplied water to each of the water supply wells in the Alamatong wellfield. At that time, we were well aware that there were extensive underground mine workings in the area of this project directly adjacent to the Black River Valley, which hosts the Alamatong wellfield. The modeling that was used to generate that study did not and could not anticipate the impacts on groundwater flow from those mine workings. I wanted you to be aware of that because you're looking at a critical issue relating to groundwater recharge. Is it connected or is it not connected? I want to place into your mind the question as to whether or not you have a natural condition here. You don't have a natural condition. You have an area that's substantially worked by at least six different mine operations. The Dickerson mine was excavated to a depth of over 1,000 feet. That would place it probably 500 or 600 feet below the bottom of the valley in which the potable wells are located. Locating wastewater treatment facilities and disposal facilities in that area, locating stormwater recharge in that area, should raise substantial concerns about protecting the integrity of those water supply wells. The other things that are interesting about this site were brought up by Marion Harris. The fact is, you have mapped the abandoned iron mines as part of your technical reports. But yet, in your review, you have no way to connect that map to policy or review procedures. You're showing no archaeological or historic features on the site in your checklist. And that's reasonable given what you consider historic or archaeological features. My point is that historic iron mines are not only historic assets, but they may pose substantial environmental concerns with regard to future development. In addition, public health and safety concerns with regard to potential collapse or other unexpected events that happen around abandoned iron mines. To make the long story short, you have a very receptive soil system, as Ms. Snyder testified. The soil system is very permeable. Rapid groundwater movement can be anticipated to the top of bedrock. That rapid groundwater may or may not intersect mine tunnels under the property. I don't know that these issues were part of the review that you conducted. I'd like you to think about that very carefully before moving on with adding conditions to a report without full knowledge of the site's actual circumstances. I would recommend that you make a recommendation of denial for the application, and I would also recommend that you go back and revisit your RMP to include special provisions for the catching of abandoned mine properties. One example that also comes to mind is the Ringwood case, where we have paint sludge in abandoned iron mines contaminating groundwater. So these things are real. They're big. They're not, you know, Yosemite Sam's mine from the Looney Tunes cartoons. We're talking about very large underground excavations. Recommend denial, please. And the New Jersey Environmental Federation would like me to say that they also support a recommendation of denial. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Comments? Applicant, you can choose which order to come up.
My name is Steve Severd. I'm the town attorney in town of Mine Hill. The town has submitted a request for changes to the RMP that are in the process of being worked on, is my understanding. This project includes one of those changes. While it is a significant residential parcel, it is also, I ask you to keep in mind, that it's right next to the Randolph Industrial Park, which is, for the most part, entirely built out and is also included in the protection area for some reason. We also ask you to take into account the 178 acres that's been preserved. There's been issues raised with respect to the closing timing of that, and the closing was scheduled at that time because of the expiration of some of the funding monies that were provided, grants from the town provided some money, the county, the MCMUA, the state, and also the federal government. Because that money was expiring on July 1st or June 30th of last year, we closed during the week preceding that. That closing was part of a settlement agreement, which is part of ongoing litigation from at least 2000 and goes all the way back to 1988, when shortly after the applicant or its predecessors initially purchased the property, the original case had to do with zoning on the property as being industrial, was converted to residential, and ultimately now that the town has worked out an arrangement which significantly reduces the impact on the groundwater by going from 760-something units to 275 in a significantly smaller portion off to the side, as I said, right next to the Randolph Industrial Park. The remainder of the 178 acres, which is where the majority of the mining is, has been preserved. And in terms of the questions with respect to the mining integrity, the MCMUA is currently looking into using a portion of the town and one of the significant mines, the Scrub Oaks Mine, as a water storage facility in the future. In terms of changing the character of the town, there are several other townhouse developments that are in the area. It's right across the street from an apartment complex. It's right next to an industrial complex. And the impact of the mine workings, part of the way the property was initially cut up from the 200 and whatever acres it was to begin with down to the 178 that the town acquired was based on those mine workings, that the town acquired the portions of the property that had those mines on it, because obviously the only thing that's going to be constructed on those is paths, walking paths, bicycle paths, horse paths, whatever, but paths, not homes. And that's why this portion of the entire parcel was selected. The other parcel that people discuss is across the street right next to the Canfield Avenue School. It's approximately 17 acres. It's going to be used for fields in connection with the school. I ask if anyone has any questions with respect to the town's position. We recommend support of the application with conditions if that's what you would ask.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Council members, Glenn Geiger from Dave Pitney. I represent Canfield Building Associates and have for many, many years, not all the way back to when they acquired it in 1988, through most of the 90s and to the present date. I'd like to quickly address some of the issues raised in public comment that aren't addressed by your staff report before talking about your staff report. Ms. Harris talked about the concern about mines, but I would assure you that this issue was taken into consideration when the project area was defined. In fact, there has been considerable study of the historic resources of the property done by two consultants. Close to $100,000 was spent on very specific archaeological investigation, finding even small remnants of foundations from old structures. Those areas that the property that was preserved included all the areas with significant historical resources, and as well as the significant mine resources. The applicant spent close to $1 million drilling the property extensively to define the extent of the mine characteristics and risks, and worked under the supervision of the township's mining consultant in terms of the methodology used to both survey the original features, surface features, and then do the actual subsurface exploration so that would be well understood. Some of the map features are shown on GIS layers, which were provided to your staff, so you're not completely lacking in this information, but I assure you it was well taken into consideration at considerable cost. And certainly any future development would have to, insofar as the project area is concerned, lay out that information and comply with all the municipal regulation that take place. With respect to the clustering provisions, the settlement effectively was designed to effectuate a cluster. In fact, the 46 acres that's been set aside were set aside because they were perceived to have, at that time, a lack of the environmental features that we wanted, that everybody wanted to protect, the township certainly wanted to protect, and that I think your policies seek to protect. That's why, with very little tweaking, we meet so many of your standards, because it was designed originally to meet C1 water standards, water buffers, stream corridors, et cetera. At the time, we didn't realize that a vernal pool had been identified until we got that from your layer, and it cuts a very small piece of the project, which could easily be set aside in a conservation easement to address that standard. The steep slopes, we've defined those and could very easily comply with those. And your conditions and your response can make that clear, that compliance with those conditions would be an absolute prerequisite for any positive recommendation in the future, or your response could simply be that these are the areas of perceived inconsistency and the issues that you would want to see addressed by DEP before any plan amendment proceeded. But I assure you, and I think, unfortunately, Ms. Snyder's review is hampered by the fact that she's working largely with a concept plan, not a fully engineered plan. There have been soil borings have been done. The analysis of the mine features on the property in the project area has been done to take into consideration. We've had a professional geohydrologist do the investigation of those conditions. The on-site sewage treatment plant would be designed to meet groundwater standards before the water went into the disposal beds. So all these issues, you know, we've gone through 12 years of development review process, and a lot of work has been done, and these issues have been raised consistently in the past by a number of different entities, and we've been forced to deal with them and address them. And that's what we've attempted to do in this settlement, is identify 46 acres where development can be clustered to occur, even in anticipation of where you were going to put it or how you were going to treat it under your regional master plan. That was what the goal was. I think what and the reason the township is now supporting it is because we think we've largely accomplished that. And I have to compliment your staff's approach. It was very professional. It was very they were interested in getting the facts right to give you the best guidance they can, which is, I think, what they have to do. I understand that we will disagree about things because they are working within the parameters of your regional master plan. But keep in mind that the context here is still a draft master plan with a township that has been wishing to engage you to consider some modification of that draft master plan. And the use of the protection zone versus existing communities in this area adjacent to an industrial park and across the street from fairly high-density residential development is one of those areas they wish to engage you in. I understand your review now has to be on your draft regional master plan, but I think that's a fair context to keep in mind as you're considering what we've presented here. When we come back to your staff's report, which is really what's relevant here, the first issue in terms of threatened endangered species, you have to understand from our standpoint that has not been an issue for a couple of reasons. The DEP, the version 2 of the landscape project, doesn't show wood turtle habitat or threatened endangered species habitat on here. DEP hasn't raised it as an issue in the review that's been going on the water quality management plan since 2001. And we had the Zappalardi report. And as I mentioned earlier, the site is actually crisscrossed by both Dickerson Mine Road, which would be vacated in connection with development, and the JCP&L right-of-way, which provided additional public points of access to the property. But so to the extent that the Zappalardi report is deemed as insufficient for any reason, this is the first that we're hearing about it. We didn't have access to version 3 of the in order to determine where habitat was identified, but we can certainly work through the DEP review process to have the report done to the detail and requirements necessary to finalize and determine that issue and to provide mitigation if necessary. The same thing, I think, on the prime groundwater recharge area, which is the point, as Mr. Dillingham's indicated, of direct and most fundamental conflict and the most difficult to resolve through consult plan or and site plan revisions. But I think taking into consideration the history of this project and the investment that's gone into it and the support of the township and their desire to see this move forward, your recommendation that could suggest, as your staff report has indicated, mitigation through 125% recharge requirements would be a reasonable accommodation by the council of the history of this site and the township's desires and still be in furtherance of your goals insofar as the recharge is concerned. Similarly, with respect to the consumptive use, the public water that's been committed to us is already approved by DEP as allocation for the MCMUA that's been allocated to Mine Hill and in turn to this development. That's approved water. Now, I understand that from your staff review standpoint, they still have to look at the deficit. We have the potential, because of the connection of these two sub-watersheds, as demonstrated by Mr. Dwyer's report, to, again, do mitigation to address that concern. I think, in sum, we are urging that you, while you apply your regional master plan standards, as your staff has done, that you also consider, as your staff's potential suggestions to DEP for ways in which your concerns and those of your RMP could be addressed on this site and still allow the project to proceed as the township desires and as the applicant owner currently clearly desires. If there's going to be any growth in the planning area, sites like this one, which are adjacent to existing development, are supported by the township and have the potential to at least come this close to your standards, even as protection zone land, should be considered as a potential site for growth in your effort to balance the goals of the RMP in the planning area. So with that, I'll thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Chairman, can we ask Mr. Geiger some questions? It seems the most critical issue regarding mitigation is the groundwater recharge issue. And you implied that maybe you could somehow deal with that.
Well,
can you get more detailed about that?
Well, at a minimum, we would have to recharge groundwater in accordance with the existing stormwater regulations. And, you know, as the applicant's attorney, I would argue that's really what should be imposed upon the project in this stage. But what your staff has pointed out, that a way to deal with that in the context of your RFP would be to have a greater requirement than is currently imposed by the stormwater rules to require 125% of pre-development recharge to occur. So effectively, you're trying to address or increase the amount of recharges coming through the use of more extensive stormwater management facilities that both treat for water quality and, more importantly, in this context, infiltrate. So, I mean, that's something that the council, if that's the concern of the council, could suggest to DEP, and we could try and deal with it in the context of fully engineering the stormwater system to try and meet that standard. Now, one thing I agree with Ms. Snyder about is that at the end of the day, with all these requirements and given the limitations that are on building height and type that are in the zoning ordinance, we may not get 275 units, but that was agreed upon the settlement as a maximum for the development, and there was the cluster plan reflects a way of achieving that density. But at the end of the day, we're going to have to design this to comply with RSIS, to meet the stormwater rules, to meet any requirements that come out of the water quality amendment plan process, and to meet all the municipal ordinances that. And that process invariably has an effect on on the total number of units that can be achieved on the site. So where we end up, you know, obviously remains to be seen.
Thank you. Anything else? Questions? Thank you very much. So we have a motion on the floor to recommend that DEP deny this application. Discussion with council members.
I'm a little concerned that in reading this that I see that it says finding on site that no historical resources are located on site. When I hear that the attorney for the applicant spent $100,000 doing an archaeological survey. And apparently it's located across the street from the historic area. I mean, that was taken into consideration.
I'm making a joke. It said on. It was on.
Dan, you want to respond?
The review that we do is based on the State and National Register of Historic Sites. And as Karen Harris had said before, she didn't have any problem with the fact that we didn't find any such things because they're not on the register. That does not mean that there are no historic features on the site. There are no registered features on the site.
So does the Act say that we only have to look on the historical register?
The RMP says that we
only the historic register.
Yes.
I was curious. We don't ask any applicants if they uncovered any historic features in the review process.
Not under the RMP policies as they're written at this time.
Other comments?
Question. The two issues that keep getting mixed up by commenters and I think by ourselves are the prime groundwater recharge area and the net water availability issue. It's made very clear by the staff that the prime groundwater recharge area really takes up the whole site, and you just can't avoid it. But then there's a statement made that by doing 125% recharge, that perhaps that would be a way of addressing the loss. So my one question is related to that. We really, in the RMP, say that we should not disturb those prime groundwater recharge areas. Not that we can disturb them if we do 125% mitigation. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
So I think that it's misleading in this number two to make it sound as if we've established a policy that if you provide 125% mitigation, you can, an applicant can disturb or in some way diminish a prime groundwater recharge area. So I think it's an important issue. And I think it supports a finding for denial because we are unequivocal in the RMP on that. And then second of all, with the net water availability, 125% is brought up as it, you know, is allowed for in the RMP, but whether or not there can actually, it can actually be accomplished, considering that the source watershed is not this watershed, and we don't know for sure whether there's hydrologic connections, and we hear that the mines may in some way have artificially changed those connections, and all of these unknowns, I think that, I think that we need to weigh that in considering how realistic a goal it is to say that we, that the applicant would be able to achieve this. So I think that's all very murky and all very unclear in terms of the achievability of that. But, you know, I think in terms of our denying this application, there are two very clear issues. One is the critical habitat, and the other is the prime groundwater recharge area. And this application for an amendment is inconsistent with those two provisions in the RMP. And I think that argues for a very clear case for denial.
Other comments?
I'd just like to make one comment. Mr. Geiger referred to the preservation of a large portion of the tract that was originally proposed. When the tract proposal was originally made, there was a lot of opposition to it. And the town, which now is in favor, was heartily opposed to it. And the county of Morris, this is an issue with which I have some familiarity, through the Open Space Trust Fund, provided an initial funding grant of $2 million for the preservation of some of this property. Subsequently, the county provided two additional grants of about $2 million each. And I think the total was $6.2 million of county open space trust funds for the portion of the property that is being preserved. And as has been noted, the Morris County also provided some funding for the preservation of this project, as did other entities. All of those preservation funds were granted with the notion that the final proposal, which is now before everybody for consideration, was going to be a much smaller one than originally proposed, and maybe not the best possible outcome, but certainly a far better outcome, given the ability of the developer under the law to go forward with the development. So I'm just confirming what Mr. Geiger said for the benefit of council members who have less familiarity with that than I do. I'm also the Morris County liaison, Freeholder liaison, to the MUA, and I'm very familiar with the underground water storage project in the Dickerson Mine, which will hold billions of gallons of excess water from streams and rivers in the area. Excess water, not water that's needed for recharge normally. This is a very beneficial and very important project for the people of Morris County, and I strongly support that. And I've always supported. I went to the DEP several years ago, and when Commissioner Campbell was the commissioner, and we were all surprised when the proposal was made to the DEP at a committee meeting in his presence that he offered $500,000 toward the analysis and the viability of this project. That was extraordinary because it was unheard of for the DEP to make that kind of $500,000 decision at the basis of a one-hour meeting on a project. We'd never heard that before. There are a lot of people who are opposed to this project still, but there are a lot of people who recognize its ability to go forward. And I believe it's not up to the council in reviewing the ability to determine whether this water quality management plan amendment should be approved, recommended for approval or denial, to determine whether or not the developer has the ability to meet all the conditions. And we're only recommending a few conditions. I think it's the applicant's charge to do that. I don't know whether the applicant will be able to go forward with this. Mr. Geiger acknowledged as much, certainly in the way that it was proposed. But I think that's not our concern. I think our concern is to consider the WQMP amendment here. And based on what we have heard here, and based on the recommendations that our own staff has made, especially considering the absence of any critical habitat, any T&E on that site in critical habitat, and the recommendation that the DEP pursue that issue further to determine whether or not that's viable. I have no problem in recommending the approval of this project with conditions.
Jack, is the water storage project dependent upon this project being successfully
completed? In part.
And Morris County has an interest in that project going forward?
Absolutely, a very strong interest. This would be an enormous source of water in events of a severe drought, which happened too long ago.
Is that close conflict for you then on this application?
Yes. Well, that's up to somebody else to yes. determine. I'm not voting on this application at the county level. I will have nothing to say about this at the county level, but I'm being fully disclosing here, telling you that I'm familiar with all aspects of it, and based on what I know and based on what I've heard here and based on what the staff has recommended in its report, I'm inclined to vote for approval.
Other comments on the resolution?
Can I ask a question?
I guess I'd like to ask an answer to my question. Is the county, Morris County's involvement in that project, which depends upon this application?
My sense is that it's each individual council member's role to make these decisions because the ethics determinations are fairly murky, but I've heard.
Well, what we've gotten from the State Ethics Commission is that to the extent a county member has an issue regarding a county conflict, certainly if the county were the applicant, but here to the extent the county is potentially involved in the successful implementation of the project, I would have to debrief with Jack to see if there are potential conflicts. So I would err on the side of recusal.
And I should add to that, I'm not a voting member of the Morris County MUA, which is involved in this project. This is not a project that the county, per se, votes on.
It's not on this property.
Scrimbo's mine was not on this property, which is the one Steve was talking about.
If I may, I've been involved in that project, and the Scrimbo's mine project ends on the north side of Route 46, which is the opposite end of the 178-acre parcel. This parcel is at the south end of the 200 acres originally, and the parcel for the MCMUA is the other side of Route 46.
Okay. If that's the case, I don't see an apparent conflict.
Worst case scenario, Jack, you bring in 5,000 pennies and you
Eric, you had a question?
I want to see if I understand procedurally. We're either voting to approve or deny applications. We're not making them contingent.
Well, we only voted on the specific application just a few minutes ago. We didn't exactly set a procedure or change a procedure. What we have in front of us now is a motion to recommend denial of this application. If this application were that. So that motion could be amended. We could recommend the DEP conditionally approve it subject to certain conditions, or we could recommend that they deny it, or we could recommend that they approve it outright.
Current motion is to deny.
Correct.
Yes.
The motion is the motion on the floor is to recommend denial.
The reason I ask is if there's a possibility to have it, if it got defeated, that we could vote to approve it subject to conditions.
Right. Sure.
That would have an influence on how people may vote.
Right.
And there is. On.
Right. I think the three options I see before us on all of these is to recommend approval, recommend denial, or recommend approval subject to revisions in the plan or conditions.
So we motion before us now is to
recommend denial. So, should I do okay, I guess I'll do this by a roll call again. Kurt Olstead?
No.
Liz Calabrese?
Yes.
Tracy Carluccio?
Yes.
Bill Carger?
No.
Tim Dillingham?
Yes.
Janice Kovach?
Yes.
Mimi Letts?
No.
Debbie Pascarelli?
Yes.
Eric Peterson?
No.
Jack Schreier?
No.
Tanisha Way?
Yes.
Scott Whiteneck?
No.
Did you hear my vote?
Yes, we did.
I've been pushing the mute button off and on, and sometimes I forget to take it off when I go. So
what I counted was seven yeses and is that right? No, six.
Six yeses.
Six yeses and six noes. So it fails.
Did you vote, Mr. Chairman?
Well, it actually doesn't matter if I vote because I mean I'll vote yes, but we need eight votes to pass something. So is there a counter motion? I mean, there another motion?
I'd like to make a motion that we vote to approve this this resolution with conditions.
You're going to recommend that we recommend approval.
We recommend approval
subject
to the conditions that are described or can be worked out. I can't reiterate them now, but the ones that we were discussing in the other part of the.
Second. More discussion on that.
Mr. Chairman, at the very least, there ought to be a list of specific conditions. If you're going to move an amendment that has conditions on it,
well, I would assume there's
a discussion and suggestion by the staff, but there's no specific recommendation.
Well, I would assume the conditions are all of those contained in the staff memo.
Those are the ones I would recommend be a part of this resolution.
So that's the motion on the floor. So those four conditions we're talking about?
Yes, exactly. And that they be addressed. That was the last part.
Through the chair, I have a question.
Please.
Could also the condition, because this, I guess, because I'm Passaic County and I've seen the Ringwood situation, and in fact, I've been to residents' backyards. Okay, and I think that it's a serious one that actually needs to be addressed because children live in these homes, and one day, futuristically, let's say 2020, a child could be playing by the field or what have you, and there he or she goes, if you understand where I'm coming from. So I would also recommend that we actually address this mine issue because there wasn't anything presented before us that we could actually analyze futuristically. So in addition to those other four.
I'm not quite sure, staff,
how we would
do that.
We could put a condition in on the safety issues and then part of the mine.
Correct.
And I just want to add, apart from the four recommendations, also on page 3, it does say the applicant has indicated a willingness, et cetera, to avoid steep slopes, so you want to make sure that that's part of the...
And be respectful as well.
Can you say that?
It's the entire memo.
It's basically, yes, that's what it says. The motion, as I understand it, would basically incorporate all the recommendations within this memo.
And
Tahitian's addition. You're accepting Tahitian's comments.
Well, I saw the analysis of the mines that was presented to the MUA, and the ones that resulted in the delineation of the development site, the reduced development site, versus the rest of it. And I think that they're... It's not a consideration that we need to be concerned about, but I would have no problem including a safety condition.
Thank you.
What's our purview of authority over that?
Safety.
Well, where is that in the Highlands Act?
Well, no, simply that it's a public health and safety or a geotechnical review that we get to ask the DEP to review the geotechnical review that's already been done at the planning board level to confirm it.
It's a practical matter. It has to come up if the county requests it. And look at the survey. We had the same situation happen to us. We discovered a shaft by a development. Bureau of Mines set out their experts. They were given the option on how to mitigate. We told them which option we wanted, and it was done. So
I don't think, I could ask Mr. Geiger, do you think that the applicant would object to that condition being added?
It's actually in the settlement agreement that we have to follow this protocol to do the mine investigation that's already been done has defined most of the development area. There's a little bit of additional area on the access drive only, but the settlement agreement already requires us to do that. So if you want to suggest that to DEP and they make sure they require that there's already an ordinance, in fact. They actually have a mining ordinance in the town that also requires it. So, I mean, they can require compliance with the what's already in our settlement agreement in terms of doing complete mine investigation and study and mine remediation. That's all tied into the approval and development of the site. So it's also a senior housing project, so which mitigates some of the concern about that. But
children are not going to fall through, unless they're visiting.
But I don't think I want to treat our senior citizens to a different safety standard, so we're not expecting that.
Other comments? Are you ready to vote? Are there comments? Okay. So everyone understand the resolution is to recommend approval of the project subject to the conditions that are subject to the project being revised to meet the conditions in the staff memo plus the comment about the safety of the mines. Okay. Kurt Alstead.
Yes.
Liz Calabrese.
Yes.
Tracy Carluccio.
No.
Bill Cogger.
Yes.
Tim Dillingham.
No.
Janice Kovach.
Yes.
Meanie Lutz.
Yes.
Debbie Pascarelli.
No.
Mr. Peterson.
Yes.
Mr. Schreier.
Yes.
Keisha Way.
Yes.
Scott Whitehack.
Yes.
And I will vote yes. So that's 10-2-3, that passes. I think one of the instructive lessons, if we needed it, of today's meeting so far has been that as we look at a document, a plan, moving ahead to that, we really have to give a lot of thought of how we're going to review each municipal application for conformance with the plan as well as each set of plans, because we're going to need a process that's going to make the best use of everybody's skills and time. We have one more item on the agenda, and that is the election of officers. We have, the council has, as you know, you're stuck with me as the chairman at the moment, but we have a vice chair and a treasurer, and I would entertain nominations for the post of vice chair.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to nominate Mr. Schreier. I think that he has had a great impact on bringing balance to our discussions about the RPM, and I think that his impact will be invaluable going forward into the conformance process.
I'll second.
Okay. Are there other nominations?
I'd just like to make a modification to his last comments. It's not the RPM, although we're up to speed on it.
R&D.
You want to withdraw your nomination?
Are you interested, Bill?
Well, this is an important post, because should I happen not to survive the next half hour? all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions? Okay. And for the post of treasurer, there are nominations.
I'd like to nominate Mr. Cogger. He's been doing a fine job and got all the numbers resolved, right?
Actually, those guys do a fine job.
Under his direction.
We don't care about the job he's doing. We second it.
He's doing it.
Are there other nominations? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. That concludes the meeting agenda, except for sort of feels like we've had public comments, but it says here we haven't. And the executive session. Would you need an executive session?
If you'd like to be brief on the litigation. Standing hearing tomorrow for the order litigation. I can brief you later if you'd like as well.
Would you have to like to go to executive session? All right, let me ask if there are any other public comments before we do that. Okay, we're going to executive session, and when we come out of it, we'll adjourn.
So somebody can make a motion.
Oh, okay. Yes, please. Come right up.
This is open public comment, correct? My name is Deborah Post. I first addressed this body over 3 years ago when this council was gleefully handing out half mil or so in municipal grant checks amidst much photo flashing and handshaking and smiles. That day, I thought it was appropriate that we landowners join the good cheer of check distribution. So I asked you, where's my check? You didn't have an answer. I submitted site-specific master plan comments last spring to this council, advising of the suitability of my property for community zone designation. As is its typical modus operandi, the council turned a deaf ear to my and all landowner comments. So I am back today to again ask you, where's my check? Where's my just compensation? I would like to be paid. We landowners feel caught in a Beckett play, waiting for compensation with no exit available to us. To assist you in making out the check, I have brought a subdivision conceptual for my property, Block 33, Lot 4 in Chester Township, prepared solely for this exercise. Utilizing pre-Highlands Chester Township municipal land use law, requiring no variances, I have 17 buildable lots. There are no wetlands and no steep slopes on my property. It abuts an existing development which is designated a community zone. It would be humorous to note that your hydrological science seems to stunningly show the water sensitivity stops and starts along the zigzag of my deer fence. If the intellectual dishonesty of this finding weren't so morally reprehensible. And I am formally asking you today to be paid my just compensation for the 17 buildable lots in Chester Township that the Highlands Act has denied me. My farm is a model of good environmental stewardship. I work with the land every day. No one on this council, excepting Mr. Alstead, actually works with their hands to care for the environment in their daily life. No, the paid environmentalists on this council do not qualify as genuinely working with the land. You are all armchair greenies, feeling self-important on this powerful and dysfunctional council. When the farmers, who are the real environmentalists, are kicked and tortured and punished as viciously as the act in your plan does, it should be no surprise to society when there simply are no farmers left. Remember Pavlov's dog. Section 6N of the Highlands Act orders this council to identify lands in the preservation area where development shall not occur and to recognize the need for just compensation. You have not done this. Your plan is silent. You have not fulfilled your mandate. What part of Section 6N does this council not understand? Section 8A of the Highlands Act says, I quote, "The council shall not adopt a regional master plan unless it recommends receiving zones in the planning area and capacity, therefore, for each receiving zone pursuant to the Transfer of Development Rights Program. You must identify a receiving zone in the planning area for all preservation area sending zones. That's what the legislature told you to do. You have not done this. Your plan is silent. You have not fulfilled your mandate. What part of Section 8A does this council not understand? Section 6N and 8A are the essence of what this council was supposed to do. You were to specifically identify those lands that were sincerely water sensitive and then establish a program to compensate their owners. You have not done this. Instead, you have listened to the slick Mr. Borden, who has advised you to just finesse your statutory mandates. Section 6N and 8A are written in clear English. Before you vote for this plan, each one of you might want to read up on whether or not you have done what the legislature told you to do. And about that check, I'll be looking for it. Please make sure it's in the mail."
Thank you. Other comments? Okay. Now we will go into executive. Is there a motion?
Please.
A motion to go into executive.
I'm really good excuse.